Judged, of course, by Wikipedia to be an entirely unreliable news source, is furious. I don't think this is a three-pipe problem. Why on earth would anybody who calls themselves a journalist be cross about children being taught how to spot lies, propaganda, conspiracy theories and misinformation? Let me give you an example. 7,000 submissions made to this inquiry. Employers, charities, academics, pupils, parents and other organisations. Or you could get your opinion from a newspaper.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, an independent review has found the UK is sliding into an avoidable crisis on workplace sickness. Former John Lewis boss Sir Charlie Mayfield's report found it's costing employers around £85 billion a year. He's warned ill health is becoming one of the biggest threats to economic growth. Speaking to LBC, Sir Charlie says employers need to take the lead and provide extra workplace support.
Employers have the opportunity to engage people at the very moment that they come into work and then throughout the course of a career. They also have a key role in rehabilitation. But of course, you also need the government to play a role to create the conditions where they're encouraged to do so.
Mortgages and how to budget will be taught to children in schools as part of plans to modernise England's curriculum. Pupils will also be taught how to spot fake news and disinformation, including AI-generated content. The changes will come in from September 2028. New York City has elected its first Muslim mayor and its youngest in a century. The Democrat Zohan Mamdani, who's 34, has described himself as Donald Trump's worst nightmare. It's emerged human error could have led to criminal investigations involving alleged grooming gangs being dropped. A large-scale review of closed cases is being carried out by the National Crime Agency to uncover potential failings. Former Victims Commissioner Dame Vera Baird has told LBC the mistakes are extremely concerning.
Not following up lines of inquiry when they were there, and no further actioning a case in that situation. Not proper investigative practice, they say, in terms of suspects not being pursued, lines not followed, victims' accounts not taken.
The Home Office says the report shows important progress is being made, but has acknowledged there's more to do. 999 call handlers are among 6,000 civilian staff at Britain's biggest police force taking strike action. PCS union members working for the Metropolitan Police are walking out in a dispute over pay. And Marks & Spencer's profits took a major hit after it was hit by a cyber attack in the spring. Figures show they more than halved to £184 million for the latest six-month period. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 12 at 97.03. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with some outbreaks of rain at times today, some sunny spells in the southeast, and another very mild day, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, any recommendations for a cosy Sunday lunch that's easy on the wallet?
How about a whole leg of lamb? Half price with Nectar. Now that's a treat that'll really make your Sunday.
Roast lamb. Comforting, delicious and perfect for leftovers.
Want to save big on your winter roast? Ask Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us.
Buy Sainsbury's whole leg of lamb offer ends 18th of November. 18 plus, Nectar required. Available in store and online excluding locals. Subject to availability, T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning indeed to you. I hope you're well. Let me read you some suggestions designed by a panel of experts with an unparalleled pool of experience who were helped by over 7,000 submissions from employers, charities, academics, subject organisations, i.e. specialists in subjects like geography or maths or English, teachers, pupils, parents, sundry other organisations. The government commissioned recommendations into how the curriculum in this country could be improved for the benefit of all. And some of the suggestions they came back with include the following. Financial literacy being taught in maths classes or compulsory citizenship lessons in primary schools. In other words, precisely the sort of unity that we are told to pursue. And crucially, the dream, or one of the dreams, of the genius, the unalloyed force for good that is Martin Lewis, the money-saving expert, who has been calling for years for more financial literacy to be taught in maths classes in schools. Who here wouldn't have benefited from knowing a little bit more about mortgages or about compound interest rates and the rest of it when they were instead studying? Well, I'm not going to put anything on the hook now because you'll have a go at me for pretending that it's not important. I did struggle to explain to my 14-year-old daughter when she was doing her math GCSE why Pythagoras's theorem was important. And unfortunately, the only example I could come up with was the one that my maths teacher gave to me when I was 14, and in a similarly stroppy fashion, asking him why we had to study Pythagoras' theorem. What possible use will this be to me later in life? And he explained that when he was marking out the touchlines on the rugby pitches at the same school, he deployed Pythagoras' theorem to make sure that the right angles at the corners were entirely true. We're absolutely on the money. Looking back, I think he was probably yanking my chain. How would he have done that? Why wouldn't he have just used a set square or a sort of big, already pre-made triangle? But he claimed that he had been compelled to deploy Pythagoras's theorem, something hypotenuse, opposite, adjacent, angle, something, something. So I'm not going to say that they should be studying mortgages and personal finance issues instead of Pythagoras's theorem, because I will upset the Pythagoreans, of whom there are apparently many. More focus on spotting misinformation and disinformation, including and even up to and including a qualification, a post-16-year-old qualification in data science and AI. How spooked have you been by the conversations we have had on this program about AI? What are we supposed to be scared of? What are we supposed to embrace? Which jobs are going to be vulnerable? What can it do and what can't it do? You cannot turn back time. Whatever Cher may have told you. But you can, of course, be equipped. Knowledge is power. So why on earth wouldn't you want to teach children about the new frontiers of technology that are going to be defining elements of their lives that older people are not going to be fully au fait with? A bit less time on GCSE exams. So the process of sitting in a hall, trying to regurgitate things that you've previously memorized, which suited me down to the ground. Let me be absolutely clear about this. Without exams, I probably wouldn't have got into university. If they'd summed us all up on the basis of the work that we did over the course of the year, I'd probably still be there. But if you give us an exam, you can stay up for two nights straight while mainlining Nescafe granules, go in, regurgitate what you've managed to commit to memory by falling asleep with a tape playing in your head, and then come out of the exam high-fiving each other for having done quite well, get decent grades, get into university. 2 days later, you're asked to remember anything that you managed to regurgitate in the moment of the exam, and guess what? You can't. So they suited me down to the ground, but I don't think what I've just described is a recipe for the general good. Three sciences. That's just the world we live in. You can't have too much science, lads. And all three of those sciences being taught up to GCSE is, again, an unalloyed good. More content on climate change. I love the idea that you could teach science, or indeed geography, or pretty much anything that gets filed under social science without having to fully acknowledge and completely acknowledge the reality of climate change. Oh, hang on, there's some very, very dishonest politicians over there who claim it's not a reality. Yeah, all the more reason, of course, to teach it. And it brings us back to the focus on spotting misinformation and disinformation. So anybody arguing today that they shouldn't be teaching more content on climate change is unwittingly, because they're not going to be the sharpest knives in the drawer by definition, they are unwittingly proving the need for more focus on spotting misinformation and disinformation. Of course, it's not just children who need help with that. And then a better representation of diversity, which is apparently kryptonite for racists, that word, as we have discovered in the United States of America and latterly, sadly, in this country. But if you are studying or indeed watching adverts that contain nobody who looks like you, then you are less likely to be engaged than you are if you can see yourself represented on the page or indeed on the screen. And that, of course, enhances and improves aspiration, because you can't be what you can't see. So all of this is, if you take a moment to step back from the carefully cultivated fury that is clear on the front page of the Daily Mail. Labour dumbs down schools, exams cut, but new focus on diversity and climate change. Just for the record, why would an outlet adjudged to be unreliable by Wikipedia, a paragon of objectivity and clarity? You can hear my interview with the founder of Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, currently available on the LBC app, this week's episode of Full Disclosure. Why would any media outlet, why would any organisation or individual that describes themselves as journalists have a problem with plans to teach potential readers to spot misinformation and disinformation? Shall we put our deerstalker hats on and light a pipe? Why would anything that claims to be journalism have a problem or be angry about plans to focus on spotting misinformation and disinformation? Can we get the editor of the Daily Mail on the line? I'd love to know why they've got a problem with plans to spy. Would that... It's on the tip of my... This is so frustrating. I can almost... What would it... So, here's... Here's a plan to help people see through lies, propaganda, the kind of stuff that encouraged them to vote for Brexit, perhaps, would be a very good example, or the kind of stuff that encouraged them to believe that Liz Truss was a genius, or that Boris Johnson was honest, or that austerity was a necessary response to the international financial crisis caused largely by bankers. If you've ended up... Why wouldn't they want people to get help spotting misinformation and lies if they're in the business of promoting positions in the... Hang on a minute. This is a little bit like turkeys objecting to Christmas, isn't it? Could it possibly be that if you're in the business of propagating propaganda, misinformation and lies, if, for example, you hire Andrew Neil to accuse other people of bluster and lies elsewhere on your front page, then would a plan to teach school children how to spot misinformation and propaganda, disinformation, wouldn't that strike terror into your hideous heart? I don't know. It's just a thought. And of course, it's not just children that need help spotting misinformation. It's adults as well. So over 7,000 submissions from employers, charities, academics, teachers, pupils, parents, subject organizations, and sundry other qualified people, a panel of a dozen experts led by a professor whose record in this field is unimpeachable, have delivered some supremely uncontroversial suggestions, and the usual suspects are up in arms. And we need to clarify, or at least we need to distinguish between the clowns who write this stuff and the clowns who just swallow it wholesale and regurgitate it, a bit like me and my A-levels. So you don't have to think very hard if the Daily Mail has told you this morning to be very cross about curriculum changes. Labour is dumbing down schools. Don't think, just shout. Maybe thump the desk a bit and insist that this is all awful. Don't bother explaining why or trying to work out why, or indeed telling anybody why it would be a bad thing to focus on spotting misinformation and disinformation in a world where we are in danger of drowning in it. And we're supposed to be the grown-ups. Financial literacy. Oh, down with that sort of thing. Science. Ugh, down with science. And a careful focus on other skills that are not immediately commoditized. Studying things that you can't transfer immediately into a job but will make you a much more rounded human being. I love this stuff. I also really like the story from the former head of John Lewis about how you help people back into the workplace. Because if you read what he's written, you listen to what he says, he's kind of talking about helping people back into work. He's not just banging the usual right-wing drums about skivers and shirkers and liars and fakers. It's an approach to the subject we've taken many times on this program. What would actually help? Shouting liar at somebody is unlikely to help. But asking how they can be helped could perhaps begin to make some serious changes to the status quo. So I was going to ask you, in fact, I probably will. I want to do this in two ways. And the second way in which I want to do it is inspired not actually by the report that Bridget Phillipson has commissioned and now pledged to largely enact. It was inspired by a call to this program on Monday that many of you have subsequently responded to in an extraordinary fashion. I just want to remind you of this.
I think when Nigel Farage started, you know, all this campaigning and turning up locally, because we live in Ramsgate, so that's quite close to, you know, Dover and all that.
He's like,
have you seen this? Have you seen this? Oh, this is it. They're all here. Oh, I went up to the shops the other day, couldn't see a white face. Couldn't see a white face. And they're all hanging about on street corners. Who are? Who are? You know, and it's just... We had the biggest row all weekend. He thinks I'm just pathetic and I'm woke and I'm this, that and the other, and I won't be happy till we're taken over. We're taken over.
Does he? Where does he get his... Is he online a lot?
Yeah, oh, God, all the time. Oh. He sends me, skip it. I've sent you a little video, have you? That'd be nice. And I open it up and it's...
Oh,
of, do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. But it's so... honestly, it's endemic here.
And that's what happens, of course, when you haven't been taught how to spot misinformation and disinformation. You believe that London is somehow more dangerous than New York City or Chicago or indeed any American city. Kate, they're talking about her husband, who grinned with glee at the thought that the terrible crimes allegedly committed on a... I have to say that for legal reasons, at least I think I do, and I always err on the side of caution because it keeps everybody calm. He greeted the news of the terrible crimes reported at the weekend with glee because he thought it would add to his anti-Muslim or anti-immigrant animus. And that's what happens when you haven't been taught how to spot misinformation or disinformation, or when you haven't been taught how to spot propaganda, whether it's coming out of your computer screen or out of the mouths of a so-called politician, or indeed out of the mouth of a so-called politician on your computer screen. So how do you do that? This is a genuine question. And I do it here, but I can only do it with the misinformation. So I can show you some nonsense, and then I can tell you the truth. I don't know whether it matters. You very kindly suggest to me when I meet you in the street that it does, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to be making much difference, does it, to the general conversation, really? But the simple point of propaganda and lies, and how to challenge them, seems to be one that we are supremely ill-equipped to cope with in this country. A really simple example of that would be the polling on how important immigration is to you. And if you're asked how important it is in your community, in your life, in your reality, in the world outside your window, then it comes in at 7th or 8th on the list. 7th, I think. If you're asked how important it is to the country, because of what you're seeing, reading, absorbing, not just, of course, online, but also from organs like the Daily Mail, it comes in 2nd. So mad, isn't it? The gulf between perception and reality. So, on the shallow end, what do you wish you'd been taught in school? That you weren't? And we probably don't know, you and I, whether or not you would be taught it now, because we haven't inhaled the curriculum lately and got it at our fingertips, but someone else will. It's a genuine question. Don't be silly on this one. I mean, if you want to be silly, send me a text. I always enjoy a smile. But I genuinely wonder what we would have done, because we weren't asked. 7,000 submissions from a variety of people who really know what they're talking about. Let's presume that we do too. Presume or pretend. Let's pretend that we know what we're talking about as well. What do you wish you had been taught in school? So as an adult, when you look back on your school days, what do you wish you had been taught? And would it be entirely irresponsible to wonder, let's also do, what do you think you shouldn't have been taught? What do you actually think was a complete waste of time in school? And I'll tell you what I said to my daughter when she asked me about Pythagoras' theorem. And I think this is true, but I don't really believe it. That's a little bit of parenting tip for you there. I told her that you needed to think about the brain as if it were a muscle. And therefore, studying things like Pythagoras' theorem is a bit like doing press-ups or bench presses. And you couldn't immediately explain why it was useful to do bench presses or press-ups, except in a sort of general sense of fitness. You're unlikely, or to increase your strength, if you prefer. So you wouldn't be able to give a specific example, except perhaps, I don't know, twisting the lid off a pickle jar or being able to push open a jammed door. But you are flexing your intellectual muscles when you study things that may not have immediate applications in your later life. That's the argument I gave. That's the explanation I offered. But looking back, come on, I could have learnt about interest rates, or I could have learnt about mortgages. It would have flexed very similar intellectual muscles, and I would be using it in my daily life. So I think we've got a danger of it, not quite in my dayitis, but yeah, it is in my, it's in my dayitis plus change phobia. Okay, what? They're changing things? How dare they? That means that I might not be perfect because I didn't have the thing that they're changing into when I was... 0345 6060973. What do you wish you'd been taught? What do you wish you hadn't been taught? This is nice, isn't it? This is a nice sort of cuddly way into the subject matter. 0345 6060973. And then at the deep end, something that I think might need a little bit more thought, but you never cease to surprise me. Maybe it doesn't. How do you teach people how to spot misinformation and disinformation? I can't believe I'm asking you that question. Or rather, I can believe that I'm asking you that question, but I can't believe how interested I am in what your answers will be. It should be obvious, right? What do they do in Estonia and Latvia, where they already do this in schools because the reach of Russian propaganda is so huge? Obviously, it's pretty huge here. But how do you do that? How do you teach that? How would you teach that child, or indeed Kate's husband, how to see through the lies, the propaganda, the misinformation and disinformation that they are now being spoon-fed on an hourly basis? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
Este es un anuncio de radio de Hiscox Business Insurance, que pretende mostrarle ciertos riesgos y peligros de los que Hiscox Business Insurance puede ayudarle a protegerse. If your business gets blamed by a client for a mistake, like accidentally recording the radio ad in the wrong language, Hiscox could help protect you. The story of your business, underwritten by Hiscox Business Insurance. Subject to already holding a relevant Hiscox policy and subject to policy eligibility terms and conditions.
It's finally happened. I found it!
Found what?
The perfect Mini! And it's part of the Mini Stock event.
The what now?
The Mini Stock event! Unmissable savings on in-stock models, on top of existing offers. But I've got to move fast because when it's gone, it's gone!
Go get it, pal.
The Mini Stock Event. Unmissable offers 6th to the 10th of November at your local Mini retailer. Available on new Mini Stock orders placed during the Stock Event and registered by 31st of December 2025. Visit mini.co.uk/stock event.
And, well, that makes there's always more of those. So live a life of ants. Live a life of...
I got tickets on pre-sale.
And?
We're in the trackside lounge!
And points on?
Adjustable desks for the new office.
And even getting rewarded on...
Lamb sheesh.
And?
A pickle.
And having a minute to...
Cannon!
Because with Amex, with rewards for life and business, there's always something more.
Preferred Rewards Gold Credit Card. Representative 86.3% APR variable. Annual fees apply after first year. Subject to status. 18 plus. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
22 minutes after 10. And if you really needed proof of the importance of teaching people how to spot misinformation and disinformation, have a look at some of the right-wing coverage of both the recommendations made to the Education Secretary about how to improve the curriculum and Rachel Reeves' speech yesterday. Oh, and Donald Trump, actually. Extraordinary coverage of a terrible mistake the BBC have made in splicing together some things he said without really anybody who's getting cross about that, reflecting on the fact that the man was impeached for inciting an insurrection by Congress, and he would be in court currently facing those charges if he hadn't actually won the US election. But let's all forget about that and focus instead on an opportunity to follow Rupert Murdoch's instructions to attack the BBC. That's another example of where an ability to spot misinformation and disinformation may come in useful. I'll start on that one. If it's got Daily Telegraph or Daily Mail at the top of the page, then you should definitely be on your guard. John's in Nuneaton. John, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, John.
You said something about Pythagoras' theory.
Oh, no. I knew this was going to happen. Can at least wait until call three before I get a coating?
No.
All right, then.
It's connected with misinformation.
Go on, then.
Because it's the love of the subject that's important.
Yes.
If you like numbers and you know about numbers, you're familiar with numbers, then Pythagoras is dead easy.
I didn't think it was hard. I just thought it was useless.
Yeah, but that's not the point.
I know. I said this to my own children. It's about flexing your muscles and exercising skills and developing...
Right.
Facilities.
Okay.
Yes.
So when the lottery started, when was that, 20-odd years ago? I was teaching in schools. I'm in my 70s now.
Okay.
And I was teaching mathematics to 12-year-olds. And I said, right, the lottery. There's a 1 in 14 million chance of winning. And yet they advertise it as you've got to be in it to win it.
Yeah.
Which is a sort of a 50-50 thing. Well, let's do the maths. So do the maths, and it's outrageous. You know, you can't, because the information they're given, what you're fed is a fake vision of what's happening.
I think you've got a great point. I don't think you've picked the right example.
Maybe not, but sure.
I don't know how many people buy a lottery ticket thinking they've got a 50-50 chance of hitting the jackpot, John.
But they go into it to start with, knowing that if they're not in it, they won't win it. But the number of people that bet,
yes,
and that the millions that the CEOs of the companies earn is just phenomenal.
And you think that could you teach? Yeah, maybe you could. So you would just teach children that you're on a hiding to nothing.
It's simply the maths. Just check out how the CEO of 365 earns $300 million a year, and look at how many people are driven to suicide even because they're in debt. And where does the money come from for the CEOs to get that? It comes from losers who lose at betting. Simple as.
You should have definitely have opened with that and not the lottery.
A soft opening,
then. Yeah, it was a soft opening, but I'm glad we stuck with it. You're right, you know. And you know my catchphrase, that's not an opinion, it's counting. You've just smashed it, haven't you? It's not an opinion, it's counting. And you would teach children the reality in a maths lesson without, you know, diluting the pleasure some people get from having a flutter and the fact that some people win. But if you looked at the numbers, you'd probably think twice about rushing headlong down that particular path.
And the craziness of it is this. A while back when we had an economic depression, apparently the betting offices in the poorest areas of town had the biggest business.
Yeah, I do. And the fixed odds betting terminals, those hideous machines, were even more proof of that particular pudding. So you'd stick... Sorry.
I just shout out to it into the radio. I said, do the maths.
Yeah.
Do the maths, for goodness sakes.
I love that. What a perfect first call. I'm so glad that I only interrupted you a bit instead of as much as I usually do when you went down the lottery road. Because what do you wish you'd been taught in school? That essentially the reality, the mathematical reality of betting. That's a really good answer to the question. 03456060973 is the number you need to tell me yours. But also, and in a way, John there has actually managed to straddle both subjects, hasn't he? He's managed to answer both questions because, in a way, advertising can be not dishonest, because it's actually much more tightly regulated than, for example, politicians. Did you know that? Selling washing powder in this country, or indeed advertising a bookmakers, is much, much, much more tightly regulated in this country than politicians' words, than what politicians actually tell you. In adverts as well, not just in speeches or manifestos, which is never going to be regulated at all except by voters, but in adverts. Political parties, I'll remind you of the campaign that we often promote on this programme that seeks to address that and has actually made some progress. But that's extraordinary. You're more regulated selling washing powder or any advert than you are making political promises in an advert. But that is why John's suggestion cuts through the misinformation element of this conversation as well. Kalim is in Manchester. Kalim, what would you like to say?
Hi there, James. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Thank you. I've got three things that I think, after a lot of thought over many years, would make a huge difference to everyone. I think the first one is learning. Children need to be taught, because as adults we're not very good at it, of learning to manage our emotions.
Yeah? Gosh.
Not getting on, you know, all of a sudden we get angry or we get scared, and we've got on the angry train or the scared train or the jealous train without realizing. And I think if we're taught to realize, oh, that train is coming, don't get on it, or you have a choice, we would be a lot better in society. A lot less angry people, a lot less fearful people.
That's probably part of what is, I mean, citizenship lessons can be easily misrepresented, can't they, by people who aren't taking any effort to work out what that actually means, or you could simply call it woke without making any effort to find out what it actually means. That's how I'd start, actually, Callum. I'd start by teaching children to ask what someone using a word means by that word. So
correct.
Whether the word is diversity or indeed woke, or whether it is integration or whatever the word might be. Just to, when someone uses it, make them tell you what they mean by it.
Well, and that, obviously that's closely related to people's feelings, but yes. I think we've got to question our own selves. So when you say, oh, that's, you know, unbelievable, or, you know, and I can ask you, what does that mean by unbelievable? But I'm talking about the feelings and the words inside our own selves.
This is the polar opposite of the Victorian approach, isn't it? It's the polar opposite of the, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, in that you actually should be encouraged to feel things. And what better place than to do it in the safety of a classroom, whether you're responding to art or literature.
And understand what the spectrum of feelings are. So that's the first thing, because I've got three things.
You're very, I shouldn't have interrupted you so much. Hurry up, it's time for the news.
Right, number two, learning to focus. Every problem, every human endeavour is improved by having better focus. The job you do, the job I do, the job a teacher does, the activities a child does, are all improved by being able to focus better. We can solve problems, we can work out things, and we're not taught how to focus. And in this mobile world, focus has become even more important. That's number two. Yeah. And number three is learning how to manage money. That's something that needs to be taught at a very young age. What it is to save, what it is to invest. You know, and I'm not saying you have to do that at five, but leaving school at 16 and starting a job and having no clue about what a pension is, what income tax is, and what national insurance is.
It's insane when you put it like that. It's absolutely bonkers.
Those three things. I would give up geography. I would give up history.
Now you're moving into more traditional phone-in territory, because you've been all sensitive, thoughtful, and intelligent, and now you're being just lazy and defensive.
But we need to find time to do those things. Is my point.
Yeah, I mean, feel more, focus better, and manage money.
Yes,
mate, you're a genius.
We would be a lot better society.
Can I inquire into why you have spent so much time thinking about this? Is it just sort of
my own problems? Sort of realizing my own weaknesses and foibles in life, and realizing at 57 I still get on that victim train or that fear train without wanting to.
So if you're trying to work out why much of the population is susceptible to, well, let's say all of the population is to varying degrees susceptible to dishonest invitations from dishonest people to feel things that are not authentic, then the answer is going to lie in our childhoods, in large part. Wow. And of course, that brings us back to the disinformation. He's knitted it all together. And this, I think this is on the list. I think this is part of the reason why the Daily Mail, which of course is populated almost entirely by men who don't feel, by men who tamp down. I mean, you can tell by reading the columns about the hatred of everybody in these, it's extraordinary. They don't feel, they hate it, because they have to dedicate most of their emotional energy to convincing themselves that they're not in pain, that there's nothing wrong with them, that they don't carry trauma from their childhood. We all do. We all carry trauma from our childhood. But as Kalima reminds us, if you acknowledge that and work with it, you get better, you become nicer, you get less angry, you become a better husband, a better father, a better wife, a better mother, you become a better person, a better friend, because you're working on the nuggets of repressed anger and emotion that you've been tamping down since childhood. Started with me when I started getting beaten at the age of 10. I was 45 before I worked it out. You can't beat a 10-year-old and not have any effect on the man that he becomes, but you can start undoing the damage by addressing some of the points that Kalim makes here. Or, of course, you can become somebody who turns repression and anger into an art form. And you can usually spot them, because they get very cross about wokeness, but they can never tell you exactly what it is. Dominic Ellis is here with your headlines.
An independent review into workplace sickness is warning the UK is sliding into an avoidable crisis. 800,000 more people are out of work now due to ill health than in 2019. Primary school children in England will learn about AI and how to spot fake news as part of changes to the curriculum. It'll also include lessons about how mortgages work. The Democrat Zohan Mamdani has won the race to be New York City's next mayor. Mr. Mamdani says the city that gave rise to Donald Trump should be the place that shows how to defeat him. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with outbreaks of rain, some sunny spells in the southeast, Another very mild day, a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10:35 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Dave sent this before I came on air this morning. He says, what I want from today, James opening the show with, now that Zoran Mamdani has historically won the New York mayoral race, we have our first caller, Sadiq from London. What are your calls? I'll ask him about it next time he gets in. Dave unhelpfully adds, obviously James will take 25 minutes to get to this point. I was reminded, because I'd forgotten something, the New York Times picked up on this. A lot of racism covering, involved in the coverage of Zoran Mamdani, including from some of his rivals. I'd actually forgotten, until I read it in the New York Times, that the first time Sadiq Khan ran for mayor, the Daily Mail ran an article accompanied by a photograph of the 7/7 bus bombing, written by the Conservative candidate for mayor at the time, Zach Goldsmith, who, I mean, inevitably for somebody with that on their CV, Boris Johnson put in the House of Lords. I mean, writing about the Sadiq Khan's mayoral campaign accompanied by a photograph of a terrorist atrocity on our streets. And an awful lot of journalists who were tickling Zach Goldsmith's toes at the time failed completely to ask about that, or indeed to condemn it in the most obvious and forthright of terms. And he won. It's New York's turn now. In fact, I can tell you, because he's mentioned it on this programme, some of the journalists that completely failed, indeed, joined the cheerleading team for Zach Goldsmith, inform the mayor's decisions on who he thinks is worth talking to and who isn't. So if you want to talk to a future Muslim mayor or a future Muslim prime minister, don't platform attempts by their political rivals to link them with terrorist atrocities. And then they'll be on your show every week, I'm sure. It's pretty straightforward, this stuff, if you take the time to find out. So misinformation, disinformation. Why doesn't the mayor appear on that show or this show? Well, ask the question and you can have it explained to you. Because some people decided to platform hideous conflations of being a Muslim with being an Islamist terrorist at the behest of the Conservative candidate Zach Goldsmith. So if you did that without challenge or apology or acknowledgement or honesty, then it is in with, and most politicians don't have this luxury, then you can say, do you know what, I'm probably not going to talk to you ever. Because what you've done is objectively disgusting. But no one points it out. Which is why we need to teach children how to spot this stuff. Including a newspaper article about a man who happens to be Muslim running for mayor of the city he was born in, being accompanied by a terrorist atrocity which was aimed at everybody in London, regardless of their colour, creed, or demographic. Just the kind of stuff you can teach. And I'm gratified to learn that some of it is already taught. Emma talks about being in school in the 90s, and a teacher would bring in clippings from newspapers showing the same news story being reported from different angles. We do it on here a bit sometimes. Once that concept has sunk in, they write, we'd write news reports of historical events from the perspective of those newspapers. But that's down to an individual teacher rather than the curriculum. So what you do, if you've got a brain, is take brilliant things that are happening in some schools and try to make sure that they happen in all schools. Emotional literacy is the same. Children have been taught a lot more emotional literacy today than we were when we were young. And think of it as the corollary to physical beatings. So you find me someone who's in favour of corporal punishment, in favour of adults abusing children with state sanction or school sanction, I'll find you someone who thinks that we shouldn't be helping children deal with their feelings more, as Camille just beautifully explained. 10:39 is the time. Chris is in Canary Wharf. Chris, what would you like to say?
Well, yeah, I just want to talk about logic.
Good man.
I think that's something that we should really be taught much earlier. Yeah. I was taught logic at university. But if I'd been taught it before I started my A-levels, I think my grades would have been better. But also, I think it would have put me so much better to actually look at arguments, look at news stories, and just to be able to see the structure of arguments. I mean, even basic things, like teaching the difference between truth and facts, because they're two different concepts entirely.
When you say you studied logic, how did you study it?
Oh, I studied it formally at university.
Were you doing it like algebraic formulae?
No. I mean, we were looking at the structure of arguments.
So this was in philosophy?
Yeah, so this is sort of like in an HM 101 type.
Because I have a bit context. Because if you take logic to like, in some levels, it almost turns into mathematics, and it gets really tricky.
Of course. I mean, let's say my car. You can say that with any argument. I mean,
yes, of course you can. I just wanted to be clear on what you were suggesting.
You basically employ a great deal. You know, it can become very mathematical when you look at the definitions of things and keep looking at the definitions of things until it becomes
second nature. Until it becomes second nature, and that is, I mean, so critical thinking we probably file under a similar heading, but not an identical heading. Logic breaks things down into blocks, doesn't it?
But it's also important where we let's say when we look at sources, we don't just assume that a news story from, let's say, GBBs or a news story from the Daily Telegraph is necessarily bad because its headline is unhinged.
Sure.
You can look at a headline that basically has no, and we know that even quality journals will overcook stories regularly.
Yes, I mean, that's a business model. We're probably all a little bit guilty of that. But in terms of basic lies or hideous propaganda, responding to calls to teach children misinformation by calling it Labour dumbs down schools, the ability to see through that is invaluable. And, of course, it's kryptonite to the people that own these organs.
Absolutely. You know, it's very, very important. And you wouldn't be surprised that I used to be a journalist. I used to write for the same newspaper that your father used to work on.
Oh, gosh.
And,
you were a proper journalist then, when it was an august organ.
When it was an august
organ. Bill Deeds.
But I'm pretty sure that a lot of the various different sections within the that newspaper produces some very, very good content. It certainly did when I was...
No, they still do. I make this point frequently. The business pages are generally strong. Some of the news reporting is absolutely outstanding, but some of it is not. And a really good example, Chris, actually, is the current story about the BBC splicing together footage of Donald Trump's speech in the run-up to January the 6th, which was a really stupid thing to do, a really bad thing to do. But to report that without acknowledging that he was impeached by Congress for inciting a resurrection and that he would currently be in court, quite possibly in handcuffs and an orange jumpsuit, facing those charges if he hadn't won the election, that's a journalistic decision that gets filed under misinformation and disinformation. So if you have a scale of 1 to 100 of badness, then editing things that were actually said in an order different from how they were actually said is bad. It's like 5, maybe 10 out of 100. Inciting a resurrection in your own country, that's 100 out of 100. And to report these two things, or to describe the BBC's bias against someone found by his own Congress to have incited a resurrection, is obscene and absurd, and it passes for completely normal in much of our media. And I can tell from my inbox that it works. Some people are swallowing, these are texts a little bit earlier in the day, but some people are swallowing this bilge wholesale. Absolutely wholesale. It's coming up to 11:15, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Here's an example from Ian. No, James, you misunderstood. The BBC purposely lied editing footage. That is a big deal. But because you're a lefty, can I say that word on the radio? No? Okay, but you can work out what it is. It rhymes with dosser. Like them, there's no issues to you. You're a joke of a man. So that's how it works. You get someone like Ian, who's got gristle for brains, is told, here's proof that the bloke who actually was found to have incited an insurrection by his own Congress, who would currently be in court facing charges of inciting an insurrection if he hadn't won the election and therefore got all the charges dropped. He is more sinned against than sinning, if you swallow the kind of media outlets that, did I say resurrection instead of insurrection? Good Lord, that's a bit Freudian. That's the kind of position you end up holding as Ian. Not the most literate of my correspondents this morning, but possibly the angriest, because he has been conditioned to believe things that are not true. And, of course, alongside the attack on the BBC, sponsored by the Daily Telegraph owners and joined in enthusiastically by Rupert Murdoch and all who sail in him, he is also letting off the hook someone found to be responsible for truly, truly hideous conduct. But hey-ho, biased BBC, Ian, eh? That's it. Keep taking the tablets.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I am increasingly sick of the merry-go-round of avoidance of responsibility. And here we have again, with the biggest issue that this country faces, the money in your pocket. The responsibility is Nigel Farage's and Brexit, and now it's borrowing through COVID. Who is going to take responsibility for doing anything about this?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
At Morrison's, we've been stocking up on festive tipples, so you can get a 1 litre bottle of Bombay Sapphire gin for just £21. Don't mind if I do. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores in England and Wales exclude Scotland. Offers and prices may vary online, and Morrison's daily was £23, ends 9th of November. Please drink responsibly.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well, you're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
At Lathwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf, we don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at lathwaites.co.uk. Lathwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:48 is the time. A lot of racism inevitably surrounding the election of New York City's first Muslim mayor. I just wonder if you can show me any headlines in what we call the mainstream media, describing Samir Zaitouni as a Muslim hero. This is the man who is credited with saving the lives of countless passengers during the stabbings on the train this weekend. Has anyone seen any headlines or heard any radio presenters or TV describing him as a Muslim hero? Muslim mayor, and then say something negative. Doesn't matter whether it's in London or New York. Muslim mayor, negative, negative, racist, negative. Muslim hero? Where's that? I can see it on a couple of websites that are not what you would call mainstream. But why is he not a Muslim hero? Why isn't this front page news? Answers on a postcard, please. And is it more proof of the need for misinformation and disinformation? You just say to a child, if somebody who is a Muslim does something bad, their faith will be in the headline. If somebody who is a Muslim does something good, their faith will not be in a headline. Would you write me 500 words on why that is? Perhaps with reference to your favourite radio presenters. They used to teach children that. I'm beginning to understand why the Daily Mail is up in arms about all this. And of course, their fellow travellers and useful idiots. Why is the Daily Mail up in arms about teaching children how to see clearly now the rain has gone? 10:50 is the time. I might stay with this because I'm talking too much because I've got a surprising amount to say. And we're not really yet digging into the what do you wish you'd been taught. We've done that. We haven't done what do you wish you hadn't been taught. David Lammy. Eleanor's shouting in my ear that I need to tease David Lammy. Okay. David Lammy, my dad's bigger than your dad. I think both our dads are dead, actually. That doesn't work. David Lammy, you're a Wally. You're a Wally, David Lammy. Is that what you mean? Why am I teasing Dave? Oh, sorry. David Lammy will be doing PMQs today from 12, which we'll be taking live on LBC. We don't yet know who will be standing in for Cammy Badenoch. But as soon as we do, I will almost certainly forget to tell you. 10:51 is the time. What do you wish you'd been taught in school? What do you wish you hadn't been taught in school? And how do you teach people to spot misinformation or disinformation? To begin with children, but lately, of course, we realise adults as well. Nima is in Carlisle. Nima, what would you like to say?
Hi there. Good morning to yourself.
Hello, mate.
There's two aspects, really. One of them, for me, would be nutrition.
Yeah. And how old are you, Nima?
Mid to late 30s.
Okay. What do you mean mid to late 30s? You just give me a number.
Just turned 38 a few days ago.
Why are you being so coy about it? Mid to late 30s. No one ever says mid to late 30s. You're 38, man. Honestly, own it. For goodness sake, it's only going to get worse with every passing year. You can trust me
on
that.
Tell me about it.
But so, yeah. What I mean is I think my children were taught some more nutrition than I was, but possibly not enough.
I mean, it touches base with a few things. I mean, you've got the 70-30 ratio. So 70% of the time we're eating and 30% of the time we're doing exercise. Now, PE is covered in the curriculum. So I think a bigger part could be played with regards to nutrition. If I'm not mistaken, I think the UK is one of the most obese countries in Europe. And we're supposedly a more economically developed country. I'll give you an example. I'm in Carlisle now, but I'm actually based in London. And okay. The amount of times I'll be going, driving to and from work, and you see kids in school uniform, absolutely amped, full of junk food like sweets, snacks, chocolates, yeah, or even going for fast food and stuff. Now, we are what we eat, essentially. And I think a bigger part could be played because you touched on, or I think it's a common phenomena, that the NHS is under great strain in all aspects. So this could play a big part into reducing the impact down the line of the later generation.
You're so obviously right, aren't you? And in many ways, it talks to the other topic as well, which is about how you combat, if not misinformation, then saturation. So I often think of the new mum who wasn't taught any of this stuff in school, pushing their pushchair through town with a billboard every 10 yards, encouraging them to pour Monster Munch down their baby's neck or to guzzle pop or whatever it may be. And there's nothing countering that at all.
I mean, I myself, I've got an older school mentality. So I've just got a three-year-old son. And to this day, I can proudly say he's not had crisps or chocolates. And I thought a lot of people might be going, oh, he's not living. He's not living. Well, actually,
I'll tell you what we're doing. Is he your only child?
So far, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm doing is not going, oh, dear, poor boy, why are you denying him all these pleasures? What I'm personally doing is, yeah, wait till the next one comes along, mate. You won't be able to hang on to all this virtue because it all gets twice as hard.
No, that's true, but I'm also trying to give him all the foundations for him to have a healthy life, yes, if that makes sense. I'm trying to do my bit to society. That's one part I'd like to park. I'm happy to pick up again.
In a French school, you get for lunch, and we've examined the actual menus that people listening in France have sent us, that you would not believe what they get for lunch. And also, crucially, actually, the time to eat it. Because that's another cultural thing that's peculiar to this country. Is even here, I see colleagues, and I don't really say anything because it would be weird. But, you know, eating at their desks, even cooking stuff in the microwave, taking it back to the desk, eating it there. Just to take even half an hour or 40 minutes out of the day to all sit around the table together and eat. I think Keith does that most days. And look what a fine, well-rounded figure of a man he is. It just makes such a difference to your sort of general demeanour and well-being. And in a French school, it's as much about the moment as it is about the meal. The meal is a million times more healthy than what we have here, but the moment is properly ring-fenced and looked after as well.
Yeah, that's understood. The second aspect, if you don't mind, is career planning from a young age. So we've got shortages all across the UK with regards to different jobs and different careers. I think a point to be made before even GCSE is, what career or job do you actually want to go into? Because I think someone touched on logic and focus. So the gentleman talking in three aspects. I mean, one of them would be, if a child knows at a younger age what they want to fall in love with, what they want to do for a career, surely that kid would probably pay, not to say they're not going to pay attention to the other subjects, but they'd focus a lot more and try a lot more at those subjects, the examinations. If someone's, obviously you've got medicine and you've got law, which, you know, they've got their own career paths. But then there's so many other careers that children could fall in love with where we've got a shortage.
I mean, you're obviously right. I had two thoughts on that. The first is that is a really good illustration of what private schools provide that a lot of state schools don't. And the second, who would teach that? I mean, because, you know, usually the fella, I don't know what it's like now, but generally, the person in charge of careers advice was also doubling up as the head of geography or the football coach. And the idea that they're going to have a really encyclopedic knowledge of both opportunity and means of access, you'd need to start from the bottom up, wouldn't you, and have dedicated staff who really are part of a nationwide program designed to identify shortages, identify need, respond to threats like AI, because that's going to bite a huge chunk out of the legal profession, which you just sort of offered up as a counterexample. I don't think that's necessarily going to be true soon, but that is absolutely absent. I don't think it's just lacking. No offense to the people doing their best to provide career advice, but I suspect it's largely rubbish.
Maybe workshops are having professionals come in to excite children from a young age, saying, actually, oh my God, that sounds amazing or looks amazing. They want to dig a bit further. I think we can, as a nation, you know, we always implore ourselves on being, you know, top five countries in terms of economics, in terms of strength of what have you. We could do a bit better.
Yeah, but you give them doors. This is the thing. You show them doors, but you have to also give them the means to open those doors. And some people don't know what door they want to walk through until they're 24, as Sam reminds us. That's the age that they were before they had the first idea about it. And you're not suggesting for a minute everyone will know at 15 or 16. But the thing about going to a school like mine, Nima, thank you. The thing about going to a school like mine, and I don't apologize for saying this, and I don't mean any embarrassment or offense by it, but the thing about a school like mine is not necessarily how it equips the people like me with schools with tools for the future, although obviously the enormous privilege has been of an enormous benefit to me. Arrogantly, perhaps, I think I probably would have been okay. I may even have ended up doing a job a bit like this because it's, you know, I had these skills when I arrived at school. They just got honed. But the kids who really benefit from an education like mine are the kids who might have disappeared or dropped by the wayside. The mediocre students, if you like, the average. And I'd mean no offense by that whatsoever. But they thought nothing of intending to be a doctor. at a lot of state schools, a lot of other schools in this country, to dream of being a doctor would put you what? At the top of the class in all the sciences and probably being laughed at by your cohorts. And this is where I understand the gulf between my background and other people's background. I say to you, an average student at my school would become a doctor. And you think that is the maddest thing you have ever heard. Certainly a lawyer, without too much trouble. And that's an average student with a brilliant education. I'll leave you to wonder why some organs of reactionaryism in this country don't like that. I'll tell you why, because I'm on the receiving end of quite a lot of this by dint of not having been born into that kind of world, but having ended up in it as a consequence of my parents' efforts. They hate the proof. They hate the proof that with that kind of education, anybody can thrive, because they have to believe the guardians of privilege and unfairness and inequality. They have to believe that it is somehow God-given. The poor man in his castle, the rich man in his castle, the poor man at his gate. God made them high and lowly and ordered their estate. What if the poor man is 10 times cleverer than the rich man? Give them the same education, the poor man will be living in the castle by Christmas.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the head of a major review into workplace sickness is warning the UK's sliding into an avoidable crisis. The former John Lewis boss, Sir Charlie Mayfield's report, found it's costing employers around £85 billion a year. 800,000 more people are out of work now due to ill health than in 2019. Ben Harrison is from the think tank The Work Foundation and has told LBC that companies need more government support.
It's about, I think, employers taking a view which says, if someone in my workforce is experiencing a period of ill health, what's the kind of support that they need that may include a period of time away from work, but it may also require some flex in the kinds of work that they're doing during that period or the hours over which they do it. And maybe that is going to be the case for a little while, and we can build that into somebody's job design and think much more proactively.
Primary school children in England will learn about AI and how to spot fake news as part of changes to the curriculum. It'll also include lessons about how mortgages work. The changes will come in from September 2028. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson's, told LBC it'll be age appropriate.
We know that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that gets pumped out on social media. It's worrying for parents because, you know, they worry about what their children will be exposed to. And I want our young people to be kind of thoughtful citizens when they emerge into the adult world. You know, just to challenge and to question. It's not about what young people think. It's about how we encourage them to think for themselves.
The Tottenham Hotspur defender Destiny Udogi is receiving a support from the club after allegedly being threatened with a gun in September. Police have confirmed that a man was arrested on suspicion of blackmail and possession of firearms with intent. The 31-year-old has since been bailed. The Democrat Zohan Mamdani has won the race to become New York City's next mayor. He's proposed free buses, rent freezers and state-owned grocery stores. Mr. Mamdani says the city that gave rise to Donald Trump should be the place that shows him how to defeat him. 6 water companies have had bonuses for their bosses blocked by the regulator. Ofwat says it's banned the payouts worth more than £4 million under new rules around performance on areas like pollution. And pre-tax profits at Marks & Spencer have more than halved after it suffered a major cyber attack. Earnings were at £184 million for the most recent 6-month period. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was down 6 at 97.08. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather. Cloudy for most with some outbreaks of rain, some sunny spells in the southeast, and another very mild day, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
There you were, prepping for the perfect date night at home. Love songs queued, cushions fluffed. There was just one thing missing. The food. But look at you now. With Deliveroo, you brought date night home in as little as 25 minutes. Their favourite pasta from the local Italian, nailed it. Or the perfect wine from your favourite supermarket, order it in. Deliveroo now just got even better. Subject to availability, delivery times vary. See in-app, geographical restrictions, service and delivery fees and terms apply. 18 plus, drink responsibly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain. Britain's Conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11, and I'm going to stay with this because I think it's really interesting. In fact, can we clip up that bit of Bridget Phillipson in the news? We don't often have much to be positive about, but what a lovely thing it is to hear a politician recognising that the world changes. And when the world changes, we should change. And the first thing we can change, if we want to change everything, is how we educate our children. Also, of course, how we raise our children. Education is a crucial part of how you raise your children. But that used to get called the nanny state. Why is the nanny state gone quiet? Why don't we keep hearing about the nanny state anymore? Is it because austerity has stripped away all of the instruments with which we used to help each other, or with which we used to offer support and help to people who needed it most? Do you remember when everything was the nanny state? We're going to be nice to people. That's the nanny state. We're going to spend a bit of money looking after people that no one else is looking after. That's the nanny state. I'm not going mad, am I? The nanny state was huge for a while. Precisely the same sort of people who are going to be cross today about teaching children how to spot misinformation and disinformation. Because the nanny state is a beautiful example of ask people what they mean when they use words. Ask people what they mean when they use words. Do that, and very, very often their world will fall apart, or at least their position will fall apart. I remember Farage telling me he didn't know what racism was. And you sort of go, well, how do you know you're not a racist if you don't know what it is, mate? You got to know what it is to know that you're not it. And of course, any definition, any vaguely plausible definition that you offer up of the word racism, the meaning of racism, then with many people, you could point to things that they have done in the past that fit that definition. So it's very much in the interests of liars, racists, frauds and bigots to either pretend that they don't know what words mean, insist that they don't know what words mean, or gloss over attempts to pin them down on precisely what a word means. Do you want to just text me the words that you would put in that category? The words that are routinely used by people who are probably exponents of the sort of misinformation and disinformation, the people who are boiling the brains of men like Kate's husband, who you heard about on Monday, and who you heard a clip of an hour ago. What words would you want them to define? The words that they use all the time. What words would you want them to define? Because words are so important. I've slightly tripped myself up a bit with that observation about the headlines that contain the phrase Muslim hero to describe the man who saved many, many lives during those attacks on that train on Saturday. I can't currently find any in the what you'd call the mainstream media. Can't find one who have described him as so. Not even, I could be wrong, but the BBC haven't done it. Would the BBC have put Muslim in the headline if he was a shoplifter or a sex offender? Would they have done? Immigrant, maybe, in the news, if he was in court accused of a crime instead of in the news for committing an act of selfless bravery? Why? You tell me why you think Muslim's not in that headline. And then listen to some of the coverage of the election of Zoran Mamdani in New York City and attempts to conflate it with Sadiq Khan on the grounds that because they're both Muslim, then they're both going to be dot, 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 dot. So it's mad, right? And of course, the people who will have something negative to say about Sadiq Khan and Zoran Mamdani on the grounds that they're both brown men will be the same people who would have greenlit Zach Goldsmith's article in the Daily Mail, accompanied by a photograph of the 7/7 terror attacks on this city. Not even that long ago, it was 2016, I think. Feels like a better time, but it probably wasn't. 11:07 is the time. Send me the words, seriously, the definition that you think should be defined. I quite like that. Red tape is Steve's suggestion. But anyway, two elements. We did quite well on the last one. I'm not nixing it. The question of what you wish you had been taught in school and what you really don't think you should have been, but were. But let's nudge it along now into how you actually teach people. In this case, children, but I know a hell of a lot of adults who could benefit from it as well. In fact, they're all there in Idiot's Corner, clamouring to get out. And a hell of a lot of adults who would benefit enormously from being taught how to spot this stuff as well. How would you do it? Natalie's in Taunton. Natalie, what would you like to say?
Hello again.
Hello.
I don't know if you remember, I was the elephant in the room. Discussion.
Right. I must have ignored you. Surely that goes with the territory.
Yeah. But that was a meeting with my head teacher about her decision to take citizenship and PSHE out of the curriculum, which at the time I was in charge of.
That was a while ago. I do remember.
Yeah, yeah. Well, basically, citizenship was a compulsory part of the national curriculum, and you had to deliver it until the end of Year 11. And so many schools did a short course citizenship GCSE alongside short course RE, so kids would get a GCSE out of the compulsory subject.
Right.
Anyway, one of the three strands of that was power, politics and the media.
Really?
So we actually had a legal responsibility to deliver information about power, politics and the media. Oh, of course, all this got watered down after 2010. Don't get me started.
Well, anyway. I'm going to get you started, because just because you know it inside out doesn't mean that everybody listening does, and it doesn't mean that I do. So the Conservatives got in and they sought to undo attempts to teach children about the relationships between power, politics and the media.
Well, the rot started when they got rid of coursework and it all went to exam, because then that meant that the demands of those courses became a little bit more messy, and the controlled assessment, the management of it with a whole year group alongside all the other subjects that they had to do, was just eroded away at. I've left since then, so I don't know what happened since, but it's obviously not time.
If they feel the need to announce that they are bringing in this kind of stuff, we can be fairly confident that it's no longer there already.
Exactly.
I mean, I know it's your, but I am actually slightly taken aback by the simplicity of that thing you just described. We were teaching children about the relationship between power, politics and media. Tories got in and suddenly we weren't.
Well, almost.
Okay, yeah,
almost,
all right. Suddenly we were teaching them a lot less as the years passed.
Yeah, because it just got too messy for schools to manage those short courses. And so when you take away an exam from a subject, suddenly it loses all meaning and relevance to the world.
Mm.
Note the sarcasm in my voice.
Of course.
So, I had a different head teacher, which was the elephant in the room woman, and she decided that maths and English were far more important. So the actual lesson that we had was taken away. So that's that's all to do with the EBAC and the league tables and the progress rate and the blah, 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 blah. All the things that don't actually measure success in a child, but that's a whole different debate. Going back to the power, politics and media unit, one of the things I did on the 9th of April 2013, which I've just looked up, which was the day after Margaret Thatcher died, I went down to Sainsbury's and took a photograph of every single newspaper.
Yeah.
And the headline on every newspaper, and it was the most fantastic visual aid I've ever had. Because the Daily Mail, the woman who saved Britain, the Daily Mirror, the woman who ruined a nation, etc.
And the truth lies somewhere between those two points.
Well,
but goodness me, if you're only absorbing one of them, then they're arguably almost as bad as each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it was the Express had a picture of her in a tank, waving her hand, waving her Union Jack, all of that. It was just gold dust for me and my department, because all I had to do was look at this, folks, and here we are, this is the media, this is obviously before a lot of the rubbish that we have to deal with now, so it'd be obviously a lot more complicated now, but it was just brilliant. And interestingly, the Guardian, sorry about that pinging that's going on, the Guardian had a piece that was part of which was printed on the front page, which was written by somebody who had since passed away. And he had written his
obituary,
that's the word, before she died, because he knew it was going to be so important.
Probably Hugo Young. It was probably Hugo Young, was it?
I can't remember.
Thatcher's biographer was a senior member of the staff at The Guardian. That's a really good... I mean, there'll be loads and loads of other examples, but that's probably one of the most historically resonant, isn't it? That idea that history is written by the winners, but in the context of media coverage of current events, it's just written from completely different perspectives, depending on what you felt before you sat down to write the piece. Thank you, Natalie. It's 11:13. I've got Mark in Brighton up next, a.k.a. Mark Riley, whose broadcasting pedigree makes mine look positively National League North. So I'm going to hold off on that call until we get over the next junction. It gives me an opportunity to tell you that some of the stuff that's coming up. We're going to speak to a chap called Ross Barkin, who knows Zoran Mamdani very well. Indeed, Zoran Mamdani worked on a political campaign that Ross Barkin was running back in the day. So he should be able to give us a few insights into the new mayor of New York. And then Henry Riley's going to have a little look at one of these stories you keep telling me I should be paying more attention to, which is the Reform UK councillors, who are, as we already know, responsible for cancelling Christmas, it would appear, in some corners of Kent. More on that later. I forgot to give you the payoff to my hook and tease yesterday. But also, they seem to be hemorrhaging councillors at almost the rate that they hemorrhaged MPs after getting elected. Could it possibly be that the talent pools from which Nigel Farage is drawing his candidates are somewhat shallow? I don't know. Henry Riley will help us find out. And then, of course, PMQs is on the way at 12, featuring David Lammy and AN Other, or TBC. The Conservatives, they must have released a deed. They must have told us by now. We're just not checking. But this clip's just nice. Listen to this from the Education Secretary. And then, in the spirit of Natalie putting front pages next to each other, listen to this from the Education Secretary. And then compare it with the front page of the Daily Mail. Labour dumbs down schools, exams cut, but new focus on diversity and climate change.
We know that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that gets pumped out on social media. It's worrying for parents because, you know, they worry about what their children will be exposed to. And I want our young people to be kind of thoughtful citizens when they emerge into the adult world. You know, just to challenge and to question. It's not about what young people think. It's about how we encourage them to think for themselves.
Okay. I'll ask you again. Why would some members of the media be absolutely terrified by the prospect of children being taught how to challenge and think? Imagine if we'd all been taught how to challenge and think. We never would have had Brexit. We never would have had Boris Johnson as... Well, we might have had Boris Johnson as Prime Minister, actually, because of what the alternatives were at the time. But we never would have had to endure newspaper articles telling us that Liz Truss was a genius. They never would have got away with austerity. Think of all the things that wouldn't have happened if more than 48% of the population had been taught how to challenge and think. Imagine where we might be today as a country. And I leave you with the question of why all the people who brainwashed the 52% in my profession, people who told you to vote for Brexit, who tickled Boris Johnson's toes on a regular basis, up to and including giving him a column after he's been hounded out of Parliament in abject disgrace, why would they have a problem, do you think, with people being taught, children even, being taught how to challenge and to think? There is a downside to teaching people how to challenge and to think. Do you know what it is? It's quite a big downside. Yeah, we would have to shut Idiot's Corner.
This is LBC.
Hi, babe. Yeah, mad day. So, do you fancy staying in tonight instead? Delivery fee is now from 99p on the Mackey's app, and we can get a free chicken Big Mac if we spend £15. So, you in? Of course you are.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. £15 spend only on main day food and drink via delivery until the 19th of October. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Have you found peace?
No. I don't think that I will ever completely be at peace.
I don't want to live with this trauma anymore.
For many veterans, their battles continue after service. Help for Heroes stands with them every day, providing life-changing support that rebuilds lives. It's not just their fight. It's ours too. Together, we must help veterans find the peace they deserve. Search Help for Heroes today.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 11:17. A little bit of the history game here. Alan's been in touch. He goes, you do the same, tarring everybody with the same brush. If we want to vote reform, you talk like we are all racist, writes Alan. I click on Alan's history of texts to this programme. Remember, Alan's definitely not a racist. What do these idiots not understand? We do not want them here, whether legal or illegal. This isn't racist, but it gives you an idea where Alan, who's definitely not a racist, is coming from. The issue is they have gone over the top. It's the same with the gays. Thanks, Alan. Definitely not a racist. I think if anything, says Alan, who's definitely not a racist, the fact that we have increased the presence of ethnic minorities on the TV is feeding racism. Well, I suppose at least he speaks of what he knows, feeling all racist despite not being a racist when he sees ethnic minorities on the TV. It gets better. White people lose out based on the colour of their skin. I speak from experience, says Alan, who's definitely not a racist. Although, of course, when I read out messages he sent to the programme, I suppose I'm speaking from his experience as well. And a nice one, I presume this one was sent in with regards to a crime committed or allegedly committed by somebody. It was on Monday, so I'll leave you to wonder about. Let's hear his British name then and what religion he follows, and let's pay attention to what culture he belongs to. British my arse, writes Alan about somebody who was in the news on Monday. I can say that word if I'm reading out a text. It's perfectly reasonable. If you're offended by it, I apologise. I won't say it again. But definitely not a racist, and almost definitely, almost certainly not talking about Samir Zaitouni, the British Muslim who acted heroically in the midst of that hideous stabbing attack. Alleged stabbing attack? 19 minutes after 11 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thanks for getting in touch, Alan. Good to see you're definitely not a racist, and flying the flag there for people who intend to vote reform. How do you teach critical thinking? Some people, of course, are unreachable. Hi, Alan. Some people are reachable. But what do you reach them with? Mark is in Brighton. Mark, what would you like to say?
How you doing, James?
I'm pretty good. How are you? Well, how are you? Actually, first of all, a quick word on results overnight in your home country of the United States.
First of all, I am happy as a clam. I really am glad Mandami won. By the way, you want to talk about critical thinking, yes. Somebody ought to dissect the front page of the New York Post, owned by Murdoch, of course, that said on the eve of the election, if Mandami was elected, 1 million people would leave New York. That's what I did. I laughed like crazy.
Oh, and here's our guest from the New York Post, because we're journalists. Oh,
yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah. And we tell truth.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of what I wish I had taken in school and didn't, typing.
Yeah. Actually, same here. Do you know, I appreciate this isn't the most important contribution to the conversation, but I've got, are they called cankers? I've got, like, on the two fingers, I'm a two-finger typer.
And
with my last book, I've got, like, what are they called? Swollen knuckles on my two typing fingers.
Oh, wow.
I know.
And see, did you type all caps when you first started working in newsrooms?
No, I'm not quite as old as you, but I did learn on one of those old-fashioned typewriters that you had to smash the key down on. So even now, when I'm using a touch type keyboard, some of the youngsters in the office laugh at me because I have to train myself not to bash,
not to bang it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let me tell you a quick story.
Okay.
When I first started as an intern at a radio station.
Yes.
I was asked by a guy who's still a good friend of mine 50 years later to write a news story. I thought I was in heaven. I write the news story, hand it to him, and he breaks out laughing hysterically. And I said, yo, what are you laughing about? He said, you can't write this by hand. You have to type it. And I looked at him like he had three heads, but I had never thought about having to type a story before in my life.
I think kids probably do learn to type these days, actually. We're probably both showing our age a bit. I'm trying to think of my children. You can't do exams. They should probably be allowed to type exams, even if they haven't got special educational needs. But yeah, you're right. It's a useful life skill that you should be second nature.
It is a brilliant life skill. Now, the one class that I wish I hadn't taken because I stunk at it so bad was geometry. Well, I detested geometry.
We're back to Pythagoras. What good did it do us? I mean, people are saying it's about the love of the subject, people about But, we just sat there bored for years. It doesn't mean that the kids who liked it wouldn't do it. Just quick one from Patrick in Knaresborough. A shout out for Pythagoras. Only on this only on this program would you get a shout out for Pythagoras. Go Pythagoras!
My man.
I used it yesterday when putting up some shelves for my son. I used it to check that the supports were at right angles to the shelves. There is evidence that Pythagorean triplets, such as 3, 4, 5, have been used in construction for thousands of years. No one is saying it doesn't have a use, Patrick. Mark and I are just saying we've never found one ourselves.
Never found one, right. By the way, about Mandami, not so much about Mandami, but about yesterday's election.
Yes.
Because I think this is the first time this has ever happened. Right now, the governors of New York State, New Jersey, and Virginia are all women.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Down with that sort of thing.
Yeah, fun fact.
Isn't it?
But back to critical thinking.
Yes.
Because I think critical thinking is so important. And James, the foundation of critical thinking is to ask why.
Why?
Why do certain things happen? Why do the stars align in a particular way? Which actually, believe it or not, I thought about when I was about 12, okay? Didn't know what critical thinking was. But the bottom line is critical thinking on a certain level is dangerous to the status quo. Because you may start questioning certain things that they don't really want you to question, like having to be educated primarily and only to get a job.
Or how exactly are these people ruining my life?
Yeah. Or who are they and why do they benefit from so many things? And why are certain news stories written a particular way to engender certain emotions in the people that read them?
Labour dumbs down schools.
That's the half of it. Wait till Rachel Reeves' budget comes out. I would not be surprised at all if at some point down the road, Mandami is accused of trying to institute Sharia law in New York. Watch.
I tell you what, I haven't got it in front of me, but I'd be amazed if he hasn't. Well, on social media, he would already have been. I bet that's already happened.
There were two fun facts that I told your producer about, but I wanted to tell you. One, Mandami's mother is a filmmaker.
Yes.
She made a movie called Mississippi Masala. It co-starred a then-fledgling actor named Denzel Washington.
Wowee.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is that when Mandami went to the Bronx High School of Science, one of the most competitive schools in New York, and in fact, in the country, his favorite teacher was a guy named Mark Kagan. Mark Kagan's sister is Elena Kagan, who's on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Good grief.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love stuff like that. You know I do. It's just really interesting, the sort of 5 degrees of separation. How big a deal is it, Mark? How significant is it? The sort of hat trick across the gubernatorial races and an attorney general election that I think the Democrats were expected to lose. It's been a clean sweep. Because I'm going to rain on your parade before you even start marching, if I may. The way I'm wired at the moment, my first thought was that this makes the likelihood of free and fair elections next year less likely in the United States of America.
Well, you see, what you got to realize is the conservatives in the U.S. are saying all the elections that happened yesterday were rigged in the first place.
Well, that provides grounds for attempts to actually rig the next ones, doesn't it?
Exactly. It really does. But, you have a lot of organizations in the States, James, that are vigilant about trying to make sure every single vote counts. And it's important to note that this turnout in New York City for Mandami, or in the election itself, is at a historic high.
Off the charts.
In terms of voter turnout. Yeah. Absolutely.
So we're sticking the Y on it. I'm sticking, my one is, tell me what you mean when you use that word. And it can be some of the suggestions that have come in. Red tape, woke, Judeo-Christian values, patriotic, legitimate concerns. Judeo-Christian values is a great one. That's happening on both sides of the Atlantic. And we know exactly what is meant by that, because it certainly has nothing to do with Jesus' teachings regarding foreigners.
Do you ever hear anybody say anything about Buddhist Christian values?
No, never.
Or
Judeo-Buddhist values or Judeo-Muslim values, which would be more sensible given that they're both Abrahamic religions. But you're just going to stick, I'm going to put it in capital letters given how this conversation started. I'm putting Y on the list, Mark. That's just what I mean. We almost beat it out of kids. Becomes comical, doesn't it? The kid who keeps saying why, the dad circle. Why, dad? Why? 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 In fact,
my mother used to beat it out of me when I was small. I used to ask my mother why do I have to do this? Why do I have? And I'll tell you what the ultimate danger is.
Go on.
The danger to society is the day that a kid wakes up and says, "Why do I have to work?" Think about it. And believe me, I thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was during a time I was in university, and I used to go to a music listening room and listen to Miles Davis all day.
You know? Which did you a heck of a lot more good than Geometry. Thank you, Mark. It is 28 minutes after 11. I think I'll probably put the word socialist on the list as well, and communist. Mamdani accused of both, including by the President of the United States of America, but to display. Most people are actually in favour of socialist policies. Did you know that? If it comes to water companies or the railways, the NHS is a socialist creation. Most people are genuinely in favour of socialist policies. But if you call a politician a socialist, for both of our countries, for the United States and for the United Kingdom, it can often be a kiss of death. Although in the case of Zoran Mamdani, it clearly was not. Radical left. I heard the BBC calling him radical left this morning, which is a phrase I'd only previously heard coming out of the mouth of Donald Trump, and I wasn't quite sure what it means, except that it doesn't necessarily have to be extreme, does it? It doesn't necessarily, because you could say that Keir Starmer is of the left, but I don't think anyone would call him radical, not at this stage in his administration. Well, you're more than welcome to try if you want, but I don't know quite what is meant by that. Does it mean that they're actually, I think I read he's going to open 4 or 6 cooperative grocery stores in New York. What is that? Is that the radical bit? I'm not sure, but we will be talking at just after half past 12 to a writer who knows him well about who he is and what he is indeed likely to do. I see it as a Scylla and Charybdis. The plot he has to, the course he has to plot now between the Scylla and Charybdis. You know those two rocks in mythology that clash together and crush all the ships. And the Scylla is the right-wing demonization, the attempts to claim, like they did with Sadiq Khan, that he's a terrorist or that he is going to try to bring in Sharia law. I love that caller on Nick's show earlier in the week who was ringing from the United Arab Emirates to tell us how great it was, and nobody thought to mention that that's Sharia law, mate, that you're living under, claiming that it was better than London. A bit weird that. If someone else did it, then all sorts of names would have been lobbied at him. But you've got the Scylla of right-wing demonization, but I worry that you've also got the Charybdis of left-wing expectation, or even centrist expectation. You come in on this tidal wave of euphoria. It's going to be very, very hard to deliver enough to keep those people happy. So that is why I use that analogy with Scylla and Charybdis, and it'll be interesting to speak to somebody a little later about what that course is likely to look like. But first, Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
A former John Lewis boss has warned Britain is sliding into an avoidable crisis with workplace sickness. The Charlie Mayfield review found there are 800,000 more people out of work now due to ill health than in 2019. The Education Secretary told LBC a shake-up of the curriculum in England will equip children to face modern-day challenges. Primary pupils will learn about AI and how to spot fake news as part of the changes. And New Yorkers have elected the Democrat Zoran Mamdani to be the city's first Muslim mayor. He's promising free public buses, rent freezers and universal childcare for children under the age of 5. LBC weather, cloudy for most with outbreaks of rain, some sunny spells in the southeast, another very mild day, a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
Whether you're managing a business or a football club, your team are your biggest strength. But when it comes to cybersecurity, they could also be your biggest weakness. 88% of cybersecurity breaches are caused by normal human error. So how do you help your team form the ultimate impenetrable line of defense? Just ask BT.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
You asked, BT answered.
Keeping your team cyber aware is really important in the modern marketplace. Regular training on things like data handling, spotting threats, and securing their devices helps you keep them and your business safe.
Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity to find out more.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
I got my Greek mythology wrong. I don't know if we should put this on the list of things that should be taught more in school. I got my Scylla and Charybdis mixed up with my Symplegades. The Clashing Rocks, and forgive my pronunciation, it does, Keith says it happens all the time. The Clashing Rocks is Symplegades, which I may be pronouncing incorrectly. The idea of two rocks through which a vessel cannot really pass because they will clash together when the vessel tries to. Jason and the Argonauts being the most famous, successful navigators of that space because they sent a dove through first, didn't they, to see exactly what the timings would be and how quickly they'd have to row to get through. Symplegades is the Clashing Rock. Scylla and Charybdis are, I think, sea monsters, aren't they? Two sea monsters. One a monstrous whirlpool that would suck the ships in, and the other a kind of giant squid, I think. Why, how can you ever forgive me for getting my Symplegades mixed up with my Scylla and Charybdis? Absolutely appalling. I think my parents should be in line for a refund on some of my school fees on that kind of stuff. And it is to schools that we return. And particularly, if we may, now, how do you detect fake news? 0345 6060 973. How would you do it? Genuine question. Whether you're talking to a 10-year-old or whether you're talking to your mum, who swallowed the Daily Mail and GBB's wholesale. The stuff that isn't true, the fear that is being instilled in people. Elon Musk saying the other day that the shires of England, I think he may have been reading a little bit too much Tolkien, and I'm normally not of the view that you can read too much Tolkien, but the shires of England, small villages containing 500 people, 1,000 foreigners turn up, and in Elon Musk's words, start raping people. How, if you're following that, or the people, sensible people, who think that London's not safe. A pal of mine sent me an Instagram the other day, and I'm not on Instagram, so he had to WhatsApp it to me. Oh, rather, I'm on there, but I never look at it. Of a young man who, I should actually credit him, because it's quite a clever little, he went out deliberately trying to get his phone stolen. So he had a brand new £1,700 iPhone. And listen, there is phone crime in London. Don't get me wrong. But very, very dishonest and dangerous people are trying to portray my home as a uniquely dangerous or an especially dangerous place. And it isn't, because I live here. I live in Brentford in the London borough of Hounslow. The people online depicting London as being some sort of hellhole do not. In fact, the ones that are apparently denigrating London from the United Arab Emirates as... a caller to Nick Ferrari's show did the other day on Monday morning, just before I came on. That's why I mentioned it. I was sitting here while the conversation finished. He is living under Sharia law. And, of course, the people who claim that London is unbearable also claim that our mayor wants London to be under Sharia law. Those are blatant and obvious lies, which sadly are not confined anymore to the outer limits of social media. They are seeping constantly into the mainstream. It's why Mark mentioned the possibility of Zoran Mamdani being accused of wanting to bring in Sharia law because he is a Muslim. And listen, Sharia courts exist, Beth Din courts exist. Some Catholics go to the priest when they're having marital troubles and ask him to sort of officiate, as it were, or mediate, as it were. But the reason why they use it to scaremonger is because they lie about you having to be subject to a Sharia court, whether you want to or not. So they are lies. And if you live here, they are very offensive lies. And if you're truly patriotic, they are deeply anti-patriotic or unpatriotic lies, because people are lying about our country in the hope of making it less attractive or less accurate. I don't know what you'd call those people. I would call them traitors. So people lie about the crime rate in London. People lie even about the knife crime statistics in this country. People lie about the Mayor of London's ambitions. People lie about the safety that you feel as you walk the streets. People lie about anything up to and including rape. These people lie about our country. And they claim that they are speaking to the patriots, the patriots. It couldn't be less true, could it? It couldn't be less true. How do you teach people to see through that disgusting dishonesty? Disgusting and deliberate dishonesty. If you've got answers to that question, I want to hear them on 03456060973. And don't hold back because you think it's obvious. We need as much as we can in our arsenal, don't we? How do you deal with this? Because you can't do it on Twitter. I can tell you, actually, I meant to mention this to you the other day. It's not just that Twitter has become a sewer of far-right and racist content that nobody decent should really be on there anymore, I'm afraid. I know that's a bit sweeping, but the government certainly shouldn't be using it anymore, not after some of the stuff Elon Musk has lied about regarding our country. But it's also, and I don't know whether this is a coincidence, for someone like me, of the quotes, left end quotes, with at the time I left at 1.2 or 3 million, it actually became unusable. So it may be a complete coincidence, because I don't want to sound like I'm wearing a tinfoil hat, but it became unusable. I went back on there the other day because someone asked why I hadn't replied to their DM, so I thought, crikey, I better go and see if people are still direct messaging me on there. And I had a look at my inbox, and it contained loads of stuff from people I didn't follow, loads of stuff I had absolutely no interest in seeing, loads of stuff that was out of date. It was just as if my own personal feed had been completely corrupted. I'm sure it's a complete coincidence, but you wonder why that territory has been conceded entirely to fascists, Nazi sympathizers, racists and liars. And there's probably more than one answer to that question, I would cautiously suggest. But the question that there is also more than one answer to is the question of how do you fight it? How do you fight it? Martin's in Newark. Martin, what would you like to say?
Hi there, James. Hi. Nice to speak to you again. So I don't know if you remember, but I taught both in state schools and in independent schools, attended them both, a little like yourself. I was in a bit of trouble at school.
Sure.
One of the reasons that I left my teaching career is because of the shift in the curriculum that Natalie from Taunton was describing a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Which moved education away from skills-based teaching and learning to knowledge-based teaching and learning. So your Scylla and Charybdis example is perfect, actually, because it was an analogy that you were drawing. Yeah. Children need to understand what analogies are and why they're effective. And a lot of the strategies for teaching people or convincing people come down to the same principles that the sophists were using in ancient Greece. They haven't changed an enormous amount over time.
Isn't that embarrassing? Is that they were getting it right in Greece 2,500 years ago, and we're getting it wrong in Britain in 2025?
Well, they were considered so dangerous that they were banned from many cities, the sophists. So the people who learned from the sophist school of how to convince people. So in a way, teaching children how to use these strategies doesn't get around your lies versus truth problem, but it gets you into a place where you can at least navigate news articles, features articles, or realistically at this point in time, video content. Because we're talking about literacy as if newspapers are what matter to young people.
Yeah.
When, let's be real, it's online, and then I think it's more of a media.
How do you do that? Well, that's a completely different challenge. So I can take the newspaper front pages and I can show people how ridiculous they are and how the same story can be reported in two completely different ways. I think nothing more powerful than just playing a clip of Bridget Phillipson sounding all calm and reasonable and the Daily Mail front page being all mad and hysterical. But how do you do it? If it's online, if it's doctored online, if it's fake online, and the people who own the platform are doing absolutely nothing to take it down.
Yeah, so what it comes down to ultimately is an understanding of symbolism and metaphor, which is quite complicated, particularly for a lot of neurodivergent pupils, for whom when they see a thing, they consider
literally.
It to be that thing.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're breaking down an image that shows fire, for example, or someone throwing a Molotov cocktail, or I think a perfect example of this is Andrew Tate, actually. The way that he holds a phallic cigar in his hands, the way that he exposes his skin of his muscles, there's lots of visual significance to what he's doing in his content. That if
so
you,
you just teach this, children to look out for it.
Yeah, you encourage them to break it down. And so you analyze things. That's the first step of teaching them how to do it. And then you synthesize a response. So you encourage the children to not only identify those skills that are being used, but also to use them themselves for an intended effect or outcome. And the way that exams are working these days, you're less rewarded for doing that than you used to be. One good thing that Michael Gove's reforms brought in, followed up by Nicky Morgan, of course, was the idea that children would be assessed on their oral speaking skills. And
yeah,
oral
I like that.
Is something that Keir Starmer is talking about. But one of the weirdest things about the speaking component of GCSE English is, although everyone has to do it, it's mandatory. No one is assessed formally on it, so the grade doesn't matter.
I find this encouraging, but it is. I mean, this is ideologically at odds, isn't it, with the recent direction of traffic? Is that a lot of the valuable stuff can't be measured?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then people like Kemi Badenoch can't get their head. Well, they probably could if they had the right therapist, but they generally can't get their head around that idea because. It's become part of their identity. I am defined by my exam results, except that time I did really badly, and that was all the fault of the teachers, to be specific to Kemi Badenoch. But this idea that if it's not measurable, it's not valuable, it's horrible. I used to live in that world. I used to very, very much live in that world, and it's insane because many of the most valuable things you can achieve or attain as a human being are entirely unmeasurable.
Well, I would agree with that, but I'd also say that, for example, coursework components that Natalie was talking about, where children have a longer period of time to plan out and craft something.
Yes.
Well, that's more reflective of work that most of us do in our lives, but also a lot of work's been done into spoken assessment. So there's this really difficult phase of life that young people go through when puberty kicks in, sort of 11, 12, 13, around that period of time, where imagination becomes a bit flattened, particularly for boys. They find it hard to visualize.
I remember that, yes.
Yeah, right. So one of the things that's been done in the United States more than it's been done over here is encouraging young people to read things or encounter media or whatever it might be, and then to talk about it orally and to answer questions posed by a teacher who can then scaffold and structure those questions to make them more difficult to assess how deep their conceptual understanding of a thing is. And during that period of time, that early puberty time, actually, it's a really effective way of keeping children engaged. The difficulty is, or has been in the past, that that's not counted in our exam system. Whereas if you're able to film a young person, for example, answering questions, they can still meet the exact same criteria without having to write things down. And actually, in the world we're moving into, where you can use scarily AI to synthesize responses to things and do that through the spoken word, well, maybe that's a more useful way to skill young people up, because we're not all sat there writing things down or analysing things that are written down.
Beautifully done. And oddly hopeful, actually. A sort of oddly optimistic, well, not oddly, but a gratifyingly optimistic analysis that these mountains can be climbed. These enemies can be vanquished. But of course, what you need first and foremost is the will to vanquish them. If you look across the political landscape, which prominent politicians or indeed which political parties would be in favour of having a better informed, harder thinking electorate? Hard thinking, not hard of thinking. In fact, that's the perfect contrast, isn't it? Do you think that Nigel Farage would be leading in the opinion polls if this was a population that was capable of critical thinking and analysing evidence? Or a population that routinely asked people to define the words that they use, words like woke or Judeo-Christian values. I mean, I'm weird, so I was having a little look at Leviticus the other day, just on this Judeo-Christian values thing, and trying to remind myself what the Old Testament, never mind the New Testament, had to say about how we should treat foreigners. And anyone who is using the phrase Judeo-Christian values to justify their opposition to immigration is a heretic or a blasphemer. Or whatever word you prefer in this weirdly medieval context. Anybody using that phrase. And the reason why they say Judeo-Christian is to exclude Islam. It doesn't mean anything, Judeo-Christian values, except that they are two Abrahamic religions. What's the other Abrahamic religion? I mean, think about Judeo-Christian values in the context of whether or not Jesus was the Messiah. And come back to me with 2,000 words on why they're identical. you know, in your own time, Nigel. So you hear people using a phrase like that, and they're engaging in not even subtle demonization and division with Muslims once again being on the receiving end. Which brings us back to that headline that I'm still looking for. Samir Zaitani, the hero of the train events on that train this weekend, and yet the fact that he's a Muslim hasn't been mentioned, as far as I can tell, in a single headline provided by news outlets who you can bet your bottom dollar would have put Muslim front and center on their radio programs, their television captions, their newspaper headlines, if he was standing accused today of having done something wrong rather than having done something wonderful and beautiful. So, to go back to Mark in Brighton, why? Why is that, Dad? Why aren't they mentioning that he's a Muslim when he's behaved bravely and heroically? But they are mentioning that that guy over there is a Muslim when he's done something awful. Just tell me why. That's what children need to be taught.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Why is there delay?
Straight to the point.
This government is unravelling everywhere you look.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
How can that make sense to anyone?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No, no medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf, we don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:51. I like this because it's topical and it ties in with that thing I mentioned to you yesterday. Simon in Swindon, I know, has got some very interesting things to tell us, so I will be brief. But do you know who Michael Chubb is? Former head of events at Birmingham City Council. Why would we be thinking about him as Christmas approaches and we learn that a Kent County Council run by Reform UK is poised to cancel Christmas? Right, I did it as a multiple choice yesterday. Is it A, for fear of offending Muslims? Is it B, because of environmental concerns about the Christmas lights? Or is the reason why this Reform Control Council is warning that they may not be able to put Christmas lights up, C, because of all the tatty flags that are covering the lampposts in that corner of the country, just as we predicted would happen? The answer is, of course, C. A reform-run council has ordered that Union Jacks, technically Union flags, I think, unless they're on ships, and St. George's flags must be removed from a village's lampposts before Christmas lights can be put up. Why do they hate Christians? Why does Nigel Farage hate Christians? I can't believe that Reform UK are ordering that these flags be taken down. Why does he hate this country? Why does he hate our boys? Why doesn't he look after our... Why is he ordering that the flags have got to be taken down to put up the Christmas lights? No, we're going to leave the flags up and we're going to not put up the Christmas lights. Why does he hate Christians? No, we're going to take the flags down and we're going to put up the lights. Why does he hate our country? No, we're going to put the flags up and we're going to not put the lights up. Why does he hate Christians? We're going to put the lights up but not the flag. Why does he hate our country? And that is how you get a job as a columnist on the Daily Mail. There you go. Except they would never do that to Nigel Farage because they're too busy polishing his chestnuts. I love this story, and it reminds me of Michael Chubb, and it also reminds me that I wrote an entire book about the topic we've been discussing for the last 2 years, and last 2 hours, and I completely forgot about it. How to Be Right addresses all of these questions of how you actually free people from the straitjackets of misinformation and lies. Michael Chubb, back in, I think, 1991, was head of events at Birmingham City Council. He went to his bosses and he said, let's leave everything up for 2 months. It saves us a fortune because we won't have to take it down again and put it up again. And they loved it. So very, very simply, that's why they did it, to save money on taking down things and putting them up again. So it ended up commemorating everything from children in need right through to Diwali celebrations and Christmas parties. And the next thing you know, why do they hate Christians? Why are they calling it Winterval? And rather than simply saying, well, so that we could leave all the stuff up for 2 months and celebrate loads of different things, including children in flipping need, you muppets, it became a story that many people still believe, which is why it was so funny when Nigel Farage's outfit found themselves on the hook for all the tatty flags that adorn this village in Kent that have to be taken down before they can put up the Christmas lights. So, let us file that under misinformation and get back to the question of how you help children see through some of this stuff, or indeed what you would teach or what you wish you were taught when you were young. Simon's in Swindon. Simon, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, sir.
Let me do the first-time caller very nervous thing as well.
Oh, don't be daft. It's only
me. It's only you. I've only been listening to you forever as well. So I volunteer for a group called Founders for Schools that gets involved with inviting, I'm doing virtual bunny ears here, professionals from different sectors to go into schools and talk about their careers, career paths, how young adults can get on that career path to achieve what they want to achieve. A lot of kids don't know what they want to do. Especially at the, you know, year 7, year 8, they think they know what they want to do.
Yeah.
And then something else shiny will come along and then they'll want to do that.
Tell me about it. I'm 53. I'm thinking of retraining as an actor.
Well, I'm 55 and I've had many, many careers. Some people say I've done well. I think I've been really lucky in my career. Same. I've done so many different things. But I go into schools and I talk about what I do and how I got to where I am. And then I kind of give them this pep talk, I think is the best way of putting it. I don't treat kids like they're kids. I talk to them like they're adults. And I think that's one thing that's missed. I also think that kids are not given enough credit for how smart they are interpreting certain things.
For sure.
And
it's the anti-Victorian and approach, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The teachers don't have all the answers. It was either you or one of your contributors said that my careers teacher was a geography teacher, weirdly enough.
Yeah,
when I left school, told me that I would never achieve anything in life. I was kind of the class clown, didn't really spend enough time in the education part of school, and I've worked hard and done okay.
We're going to run out of time. Why? I'm just interested in why you do this, Founders for Schools. What drew you to it, Simon? And don't be modest. I want you to tell me honestly.
It was never done for me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I think that, I know it sounds stupid, I know.
No, it doesn't. I just said it sounds beautiful. Stop flagellating yourself. You're like Dobby the house elf.
I'm always like this. So I was told at school that I would never make anything of myself. So when I left school, the career teacher said, what do you want to do when you leave school, Simon? I said, I want to be a nightclub DJ.
Yeah.
And because I spent 15 years having a very successful career as a nightclub DJ, getting quite well known, travelling around the world DJing. It was fantastic. Exactly. bit of happy house. We're all for that. But I moved on from that.
And you knew there was more. What do you do
there
next?
There was more to life. I didn't meet my wife until I was in my mid-30s and had a very nice time being single, and I've now got two lovely grown-up kids, and I've always treated them
I want to give such a thought. I think, what can I give back? How can I help the me that went down a different path?
And that's what I try and do.
Do you want to know something? Go on, quickly.
Just one last thing. When kids stop asking why, that's when we've got a problem.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I'm tempted to ask why, but I think we could fill in the gaps on that one ourselves. Do you want to know something funny?
Always.
At my public school, where obviously we were encouraged to believe that we could be anything that we wanted to be, even though I had my stories about a housemaster suggesting that by the age of 21 I'd either be in prison or a millionaire, and of course I was neither. But they undertook some quite comprehensive, I just remembered this, they undertook some quite comprehensive careers analysis where we had to do loads of like multiple choice and personality tests and stuff like that. And then they sent your parents a little booklet of possible career paths. And guess what I came first on? Guess what the most... And I'm not sure I took the exercise entirely seriously, Simon. But guess what they told me I should be after filling in these pages and pages?
I daren't think, but I did fill in the same survey.
What were you? What did they tell you to be?
I was going to work in the post room of TSB Bank, which was the big bank in Andover where I grew up.
I win. I win this, because I was going to be a nightclub DJ.
No way.
No way.
You should have taken the career path.
I tried. Absolutely shocking. Oh, dear. It is 12 noon. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. PMQs is on the way, featuring, you know him and I know him, ladies and gentlemen, I give you James Cartridge.
Cartilage.
I did that on purpose.
I thought you would. James, it's not too late for a career change if you really want to go. I'm sure the Ministry of Sound
is David Lammy
applications.
In the red corner?
Yeah, David Lammy. And, yeah, I was surprised, it's fair to say, that the Tories told me earlier today that it would be James Cartilage that is taking to the stage in the House of Commons to go up against David Lammy, because it's deputy PMQs, because the Prime Minister is off to COP today.
Lammy's first time.
It is his first time.
So since Angela Rayner resigned?
Exactly.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been a while, hasn't it? There was a time when he was away all the time, desperately trying to, of course, re-establish some of our international reputation after years of Boris Johnson being in Downing.
Exactly. So the Never Hear Keiras might come out again today. Mm. Who knows? But yes, James Cartledge is someone you probably never heard of, imagine, before today.
How dare you?
Have you?
Ask me anything.
Have you had him? Where's he from?
James Cartledge.
Yeah. What does he do?
Kettering.
Is he?
Yeah.
Did you Google him?
No, he's from Kettering. Ask
is
me another
he actually?
One. Yeah.
What's his current status in the Tory party?
Shadow Defence Secretary.
Very good.
Of course.
Very good.
But also...
Has he any military experience?
Oh, yes.
There we go. Yeah. Okay, good. Three out of three. Okay, you know probably more than 99%.
He's not from Kettering. If he's from Kettering, that's an extraordinary
coincidence. I don't think he is from Kettering, but I nodded along and smiled and played the game with you. I think you
may... we've got to teach kids how to spot misinformation.
I know, sorry, I've totally failed at the first pebble. I just said, yep, that sounds right. That sounds right. But yes, someone told me, a Conservative spokesperson told me, firstly, that, he just fancied it. He just fancied a go. Obviously, you know, Kemi Badenoch is trying to get it.
Surely Mark Francois fancies it.
Well, I'm sure everybody fancies it.
Can we not let Mark Francois have a go just for giggles?
Well, he doesn't have a shadow of French
Oh, give him one, for goodness sake. Okay. Can't they recognise talent when it stares them in the face?
We'll have a word. But they then said that Kemi Badenoch wants to show the depth and breadth of her team, and that James is an accomplished Commons performer and deserves to be seen on a platform like deputy PMQs. So, look, I don't know what he's going to be like, to be honest with you. I've seen him in the Commons. He's very forensic in his brief as Shadow Defence Secretary. He's got a lot of experience in this field. He's very passionate about the armed forces. Remembrance Sunday on Sunday, of course. Lots going on in his brief, including, obviously, the Chagos Islands deal. Maybe he'll go on that. That seems to be a Tory favourite that they like repeating.
I was reading about that at the weekend. Do you know one of the major contributing factors to why the Labour government found itself compelled to sign this deal with Mauritius over the Chagos Islands?
I believe it's something to do with the last Tory.
Oh, it's bigger than that.
Go on.
Something that no Tory is going to mention in a million years. Brexit.
Ah, there we go.
To Philip Sands, who was a legal advisor to Mauritius on this, and he would cite Brexit as being possibly the biggest reason why it had to happen. More on this after PMQs with David Lammy and the other fellow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I begin by associating myself and the opposition with the remarks by the Deputy Prime Minister about the terrible and horrific attack in Huntingdon. We wish a speedy recovery to those still in hospital and pay tribute to the brave actions of the public and the police. Now, Mr. Speaker, overnight, the father of the girl assaulted in Epping by Hadish Gabatu, the illegal immigrant, released by accident, said the government had failed them relentlessly. Now, I confess, I'm surprised the Deputy Prime Minister hasn't already apologised. So I'm going to give him an opportunity now. Will he apologise to the family concerned?
Yeah. Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, it's great to see the Honourable Gentleman in his place. I had expected to see the Shadow Justice Secretary, but nevertheless, I'm pleased to see the Honourable Gentleman. He must have missed the debate, because in the debate, of course, I said sorry for the anxiety caused whilst Kibatu was at large, and I repeat that, and it's hugely important that Dame Lynn Ann Owers now gets to the bottom of what has happened with her further investigation.
James Carthage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Watching the interview last night, I have to say, it was absolutely heartbreaking. And I have to say, Mr. Speaker, I do think he owes it to offer an apology here on the floor of the House. But he should have done that at the start of his remarks, Mr. Speaker. These are very serious matters, Mr. Speaker, which is why I want to ask him a further very important question. Can he reassure the House that since Kibatu was released, no other asylum-seeking offender has been accidentally let out of prison?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, the House is thankfully quiet, so I'm surprised the Honourable Gentleman didn't hear me when I said that, of course, I apologise and I'm sorry for the anxiety caused. But look, let me just remind him that he was a justice minister that allowed our prisons to get to this state in the first place. And it's now for us to fix the mess that we've got into. It's important that Dame Lynn Ann Owers can now continue her work and understand what is happening. He knows that early release has begun under their watch in 2021.
Mr. Speaker, these are extremely serious crimes that we are talking about. I'm going to ask him the question again. Can he reassure the House that since Kibatu was released, no other asylum-seeking offender has been accidentally let out of prison? It's a very specific question for him to answer.
Deputy Prime Minister.
After his release, I put in place the toughest checks we've ever had in the prison system. It is important that Lynn Owens is able to get to the bottom of her work. I suspect there'll be more checks and balances we need to do. What we inherited was a complicated system that they set up, letting people out on the sly. That's part of the problem, and we're trying to fix it.
James Carthage.
Mr. Speaker, he's the Justice Secretary. He's responsible for the justice system. He needs to take responsibility. And I'm asking him a straight question. And I'm going to repeat it once more for the avoidance of doubts, because he didn't answer it twice. He's here to answer questions. Can he reassure the House that since Kibatu was released, no other asylum-seeking offender has been accidentally let out of prison? It's a clear question. Can he give an answer?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Get a grip, man. I know I'm the Justice Secretary. That's why I'm time at the dispatch box also as Deputy Prime Minister. We know that. I'm not going to pray an aid. Dame Anne Owens is a former Deputy Commissioner in London, head of the NCA. It is for her to get to the bottom of that work. Of course we know that there have been spikes since 2021 under his watch. When did he come to this House and apologise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The purpose of government is to take...
I want to hear both. Quiet. James Carr.
Mr. Speaker, it's getting noisier now, so just in case he didn't hear me. He's the Justice Secretary. Can he reassure the House that since...
Order. I will have no gestures from the balcony. Let me reassure you, don't gesture to me. It's not a wise decision. This is important. Prime Minister's questions. All our constituents are listening.
People in Epping and right across the country want to know the answer, Mr. Speaker. So I'm going to ask him again. He's the Justice Secretary. Can he reassure the House that since Kabati was released, no other asylum-seeking offender has been accidentally let out of prison? Can he answer the question?
Deputy Prime Minister.
I've got to tell you, I spent 14 years in opposition and I did a hell of a lot better than he's just done. I have answered the question. Under their watch, prisons were in a mess. Suicides went up. Prison officers cut. 20,000 neighbourhood polices lost. We've deported more in the last year than they deported in the last 5 years. Please, I'm not going to take any lecture from the Honourable Gentleman.
Mr. Jewis and Mr. Stafford, you test my patience each week. Today's not the day to test my patience. We do have quite a bank holiday, so I certainly wouldn't want to be testing it at the moment. James Carr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The public are extremely concerned about what happened in the Kabatu case. They want to know there won't be a repeat. So I'm putting to him a very clear question about his responsibilities. I repeat, can he reassure the House that since Kabatu was released, no other asylum-seeking offender has been accidentally let out of prison? Can he answer the question?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I'm looking forward to being up against the member for Newark next time. In 25 years in this House, I've not witnessed a more shameful spectacle, frankly, than what the party opposite left in our justice system. Their criminal negligence on his watch as a former Justice Minister. They left our prisons on the brink of collapse entirely, threatening to allow offenders to run wild on our streets. He knows that. Rape victims waiting years for their day in court. He knows that. Neighbourhood policing decimated, leaving our people feeling unsafe in their communities, and they haven't learned a thing. We are tackling knife crime. That's why it's falling. 13,000 more bobbies we are putting on the streets, kicking out 5,000 foreign criminal offenders. I've got to say to the Honourable Gentleman, he should do better.
Jonathan Blash. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My constituent, Georgia Hart.
More, I got it to six. James Carter. It is six. All right. Six, you've had your six. Sorry, I was correct. Yeah. Jonathan Blash.
Mr. Speaker.
Order. Jonathan Blash.
Mr. Speaker, my constituent, Georgia Hart, was just 15 years old when she was diagnosed with Friedreich's ataxia, a cruel and degenerative condition that slowly robs a person of their mobility and independence. Since then, her courageous parents have battled day in and day out to raise awareness and money to get her the treatment she needs. There is now a drug, omaveloxolone, which has been proven to slow the progression of the disease, Yet despite this, it's been stalled by NICE, partly because the number of patients affected is judged to be above the limit for ultra-rare conditions. Georgia and those like her are being failed not because the science isn't there, not because the treatment isn't there, but because simply the numbers do not add up. Does the Deputy Prime Minister agree? We cannot allow bureaucracy to stand in the way of life-changing treatment. And will he commit to ensuring that I, along with Ataxia UK, can meet the relevant minister at the earliest opportunity so that Georgia and her families do not lose more precious time?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, like the Honourable Member for Braintree, it doesn't seem that the spokesman can count, let alone stand up on behalf of the public. But can I thank my honourable friend? Our NHS has a strong record in delivering new medicines for rare diseases, and that evaluation process is rightly led by NICE, as I understand the manufacturer of the new treatment for Friedreich's ataxia has withdrawn from this process. However, the door remains open for the company to re-engage, and I'm very happy to arrange a meeting that my honourable friend is seeking more broadly to help ensure everyone gets the care they deserve while investing an additional $29 billion in the National Health Service.
Yeah. Desi Cooper, Deputy Leader of the Liberal Democrats.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On behalf of my party, can I join the Deputy Prime Minister in expressing our horror at the terrifying knife attack at the weekend and pay tribute to all those, including the emergency services, who put themselves in harm's way to protect others. And as we approach Remembrance Sunday, can I also join him in remembering all those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for our rights and our freedoms. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, those rights and freedoms are now under threat in a way that we have not seen since the Second World War. Putin is waging war on our continent and interfering in democracies across Europe. The Chinese government is waging espionage against this house, and Elon Musk is inciting violence on our streets. To date, the government has failed to heed our calls for a new inquiry into Russian meddling, failed to place China on the enhanced tier of country threats, and failed to launch an MI5 investigation into the threat posed by Elon Musk. So can I ask the Deputy Prime Minister, what will it take for the government to act and protect our democracy?
Yeah. Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, I'm very grateful to the Honourable Lady. Can I just remind her, as Foreign Secretary, I stood at this dispatch box and I spoke to the China audit that we said we would do in coming into government, and we did that. I did it on the same day that we published our national security strategy, and of course my defence colleague has also published the strategic defence review. She looks across all three of those documents. They set this country in the best place possible to face down the threats that she rightly refers to.
Desi Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope the Deputy Prime Minister in his new role will consider our calls again. But right now, families across the country are struggling with a cost of living crisis, yet the Chancellor is preparing to increase taxes. Meanwhile, because of high interest rates and arcane Treasury rules to do with quantitative easing, the big banks are making billions of pounds in windfall profits that they never expected, that they never relied on, and never had to take any risk to earn. So without asking the Deputy Prime Minister to preempt the Chancellor's budget, can I ask the Deputy Prime Minister which he thinks is fairer, taxing struggling families or taxing big banks?
Yeah. Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, she knows we've got 80 years of convention, and it is for the Chancellor of the Exchequer to present her budget later on this month. But can I just say gently to her, it is under her government, in which they were in coalition with the Conservatives, that we saw austerity right across our country. And she will know that there are major parties proposing austerity again. And I know that the Chancellor will do everything she can to continue, as she set out yesterday, to invest in our NHS and our public services.
Tristan Osborne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The leader of my
almost bringing it in on time there. 12:16. That was a bit of an odd one. I am looking forward to discussing what we've just witnessed with Natasha Clarke. I hope you are as well. It will happen after this.
This is LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name was Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Did you know HGVs have four zones of limited vision around them? If you're in one of these areas, you may not be seen by the driver. These four limited vision zones are in front, behind, and at both sides of the HGV. So when you're driving around a HGV, don't linger around them, because they may not notice you're there. Know the HGV zones. National Highways.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Stop up on island fuel. R. Rest every 2 hours too. I. Inspect tire your pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Think, do the four trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 18 minutes after 12, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Should we get this out of the way early? I know you probably didn't see the pictures, but the chap who was speaking for the Tories, James Cartledge, has quite dark eyebrows and quite white hair, prompting one of my correspondents to describe him as a Timu Alistair Darling, which is just not fair.
It is quite funny.
It's funny, though, isn't it? It is funny, yes.
And it's a bit true, isn't it? Poor James Cartledge.
Poor James Cartledge.
You can't help it.
That was a bit odd, wasn't it?
That was a bit painful, I thought, actually. It was a bit awkward.
I thought.
Carnage with cartilage.
Well played. The conversation that we had while we were also listening, I presumed that he had something up his sleeve. You were right, he didn't. Mm. But I presumed that the only reason why he'd do all of his questions on can you guarantee that no other asylum seeker, I mean, 200-odd people were released by accident over the course of the calendar year, so it's not impossible that this has happened. And, of course, some people care a heck of a lot more about asylum seekers committing crimes than they do about anybody else committing crimes, which is a conversation for another day. James Cartledge is clearly one of those people. I presumed he was going to hit him with a thing he didn't know.
I thought he might use the final question to say, well,
it is outrageous that the Justice Secretary is not aware of Natasha Clarke, recently released for hideous crimes. Yes, all of that.
Crimes against humanity. Yeah, absolutely. And he didn't. So did he? Was it just a case of him wanting to work backwards from the headline, as sort of some people might think, right? So you say, oh, the
could there be a story about to break?
Maybe, potentially.
Someone gave the Tories a heads up.
Potentially.
Why wouldn't he break it himself?
I don't know. It's a little.
I'm confused. Result. I'm genuinely confused. Doesn't maybe, often happen.
But maybe there is a story about to break, and we don't know about it. Or is he just going on the fact that he's looking at the statistics, and actually, according to the Ministry of Justice, 262 people in the last 12 months to March 2025 were released mistakenly from prison, and he thought, well, actually, since Kabatu's been released, there's a chance that one more has probably slipped through the net. It's up 128% increase on the previous year. David Lammy, to be fair, did not seem to be prepared for this answer. And as the Shadow Justice Secretary, you might expect him to have had an idea. Maybe one has been released and he just didn't want to say it, but he could not answer that question. So either
thought what we thought, which is it's not impossible that it's happened.
Exactly.
Because,
but he obviously,
it's been going on for years. It's been going on forever. Mm-hmm. Numbers are up this year, but there was a particularly hideous example back in 2019 where a bloke that was accidentally released under the Tories went on a, I don't know quite how to phrase it, but a rampage of rape. It was a hideous crime. I remember it fairly well, not well enough to remember his name, but I mentioned it to you a moment ago.
Joseph McCann.
Joseph McCann is the guy I'm thinking of.
And yeah, it's fair to say this is something that's happened under the last Conservative government. According to the figures that I remember from Number 10, I can't find them when I was just doing a quick search, but I think I recall that a Number 10 spokesperson told us a couple of weeks ago that they believed that at least 800 under the last Conservative, I think it was 14 years of government, were mistakenly released. So this has been something that goes on all the time. And David Lammy's did not know, so that's not a fantastic look for David Lammy. It felt to me he was a bit underprepared for this Prime Minister's questions, actually. I didn't feel that you know, the fact that he's going on something which he could have gone on anything. James Cartledge could have gone on defence, which is obviously his strong subject, but not David Lammy's. He could have gone on, you know, the economy. He could have done anything that he wanted with this session. And actually, he did choose to go on something that David Lammy should know a little bit more about. And I thought that David Lammy's sort of third or fourth answer to him, where he said, "This is because of all the mess you've left us behind. You know, the public are concerned. This has been a shameful spectacle of what they left on his watch. You know, rape victims waiting years for their justice." That was the answer I really wanted him to give a little bit earlier on in the session. And he did have a punchy answer, but he did not have an answer to that crucial question which James Cartledge used all of his questions on, all six questions, asking him, can you guarantee this or not?
Yeah.
And was I don't know if I'm wrong on this, but was it at the start, can he guarantee whether anybody has been released, or was it specifically
asylum seekers?
Asylum seekers. I remember that being the case on the
That's why I thought he's got something up his sleeve, you see.
Yeah.
Because if he said as anyway, he said, I can't guarantee that because the system we inherited is an absolute mess.
And that would have been a fine answer to have, whether you agreed with it or not.
He didn't seem to know. It's just name-checked LBC, apparently.
I see.
This might have been a miss here, but we shall find out why. Unless it's embarrassing, in which case we'll completely ignore it and pretend that this part of the programme never happened.
He also started with that story, which actually LBC spoke to the father of the someone related to the father of the victim of the Epping migrant sex attack last week, where they said that they didn't have an apology from David Lammy, and they were upset that they hadn't heard from the Justice Secretary after the release of Kabatu.
Well, personally, like a phone call.
They had been mistakenly released. I think the family were told, but they were upset to have not heard from David Lammy personally, upset to have not got a private or a personal apology. David Lammy says, "Oh, I did stand up in the House of Commons and I did apologise," but the family were quite hurt about that, and they felt that they hadn't been in touch with enough people in government. So that was what he was referring to.
261 other families in the course of the last year, equally entitled to be upset, of course.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. But I thought, you know, David Lammy's sort of, obviously, he's added Weetabix, didn't he? He was very punchy. Get a grip, man. The investigation into Kabatu's release on its way, saying that we're going to leave them to do their job. You know, he's obviously, and has to be fair, put in some incredibly tough checks into the justice system in the last couple of weeks. Many the Prison Officers Association and some others are quite upset because they feel that that actually is putting the burden too far the other way. They're saying that each check before a prisoner's release is going to cost them an extra 45 minutes of time to do. David Lammy has been absolutely adamant that this is something that needs to be done to stop more people being mistakenly released. And I guess we'll see when the figures come out in another sort of 6 months, year or so, whether it's made any impact or not. But, you know, it's fair to say that it has been going up and up. And this is something that David Lammy is actually doing something about.
Indeed. And then Daisy Cooper doing something that I suppose a government has. It's easier in opposition, isn't it, to tilt at a windmill like Elon Musk. But they probably would have done in opposition, and it is therefore slightly troubling that they are not doing so in government. But the state of Twitter and the increasingly unhinged interventions of Elon Musk in our public discourse, I don't know how it can continue in its current form, and it fell to Daisy Cooper to raise the point.
Yes, she did. So she raised China, she raised threats posed by Elon Musk, she asked when will the government act, but I didn't really hear an answer from David Lammy. And actually, when our colleague Lewis Goodall was speaking to John Healy over the weekend on this, he also pressed him about Elon Musk and the government's sort of thoughts on this, and John Healy got quite I think a little bit frustrated at the sort of line of questioning. You know, it's not for me to comment on Elon Musk and what he does. But it's fair to say that he, you know, is having an impact on democracy here in Britain equally. And he's sticking his oar in a lot, isn't he? And like I say, many people, including Daisy Cooper and others, having real concerns about that. Daisy Cooper also raising the cost of living crisis, talking about the elephant in the room, really, of Prime Minister's questions today about, which James Cartledge didn't mention, taxes, the budget. It's what everyone's talking about all week, whether the Chancellor is preparing to raise them. Of course, David Dammey can't answer because, well, firstly, he doesn't know. And secondly, they haven't decided yet.
And thirdly, they never do. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird little political tradition that whoever is in opposition lambasts the government and badges the government for straight answers to questions about what's going to be in the budget. And whoever is in government responds by saying, we can't possibly tell you what's in the budget until we tell you what's in the budget when we do the budget. We brief journalists shortly before we do the budget. But until then, our lips are sealed.
And the media...
And they all do it.
Yeah.
And yet they all do the opposite as well.
In that case, I do think that probably Keir Starmer probably shouldn't have replied to, you know, as we were talking about last week.
Yes.
Yes.
That one time.
Mate, you could have really, you know, it's a bit of an own goal to think that she wouldn't use those words against you at some point if that indeed was what you were going to do, even if you had no idea whether you're going to do it. Commenting on a budget, then not commenting on the budget as you go on the run-up to the budget, probably not a fantastic strategy. But yes, don't think that would have gone down particularly well. But I kind of thought that maybe the Tories would say, well, actually, last week we forced the Prime Minister to, refuse to rule out the fact that there's tax rises. Rachel Reeves has given this big speech where she can't say what she's going to do. She's saying she's all going to hit us in the wallet. This is what we told you would happen. And none of that today at all. So maybe we're saving that for when Kemi Badenoch gets back.
Are the Liberal Democrats still on Twitter?
I believe so, yeah. As in the Liberal Democrat Party or FDP?
Yeah. I mean, Daisy Cooper, I mean, you can't quite have it. Can you have it both ways?
It's a good point. Ed Davey is definitely still on Twitter because I was looking up him earlier. I'm not sure about Daisy Cooper. I think the party still are.
Well, if Ed Davey is, then my point stands. Yeah. You know, you can't be pointing out how toxic and anti-British it is without leaving it, really.
Or you could say, well, actually, I'm having the argument. I'm having the argument on the platform and I'm taking the fight to them.
I suppose you could, but the government is the only body that can actually make a meaningful change.
Yeah, well, to be fair, she said, when will the government act on this? It wasn't clear what she wants the government to do to act. I don't have the answers. I don't know what Daisy Cooper's proposed response is. But it's fair to say that it's a topic that you know, gets many politicians, quite worried. David Dammey, in his answer, talked about, you know, when he was Foreign Secretary, the National Security Strategy, etc., etc. They set this country in the best place possible to face down these threats that she refers to. That's not quite what she meant, really, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, will it clip up? Well, I'm just trying to work out why James Cartledge pursued this curious line. Answer number one is because something's about to come out that will turn it into something that it wasn't, something that it isn't yet. And answer number two, it's going to clip up really well. We underestimate talking about Twitter and how racist it is. David Lammy is black. Him not providing a clear answer to a question about evil immigrants, which is how Twitter would absorb this incident, could work well for them on there, but I don't know that it's going to win over any new supporters.
I think you worked backwards from the headline. I think that's what they were trying to do. Is you know, Deputy Prime Minister and Justice Secretary cannot promise or cannot reassure public that no prisoners have been mistakenly released in the last 2 weeks.
But he can make a phone call when he gets back to the office,
to say,
and then he can.
He could, yeah. But is it your favourite phrase, that the lie gets around halfway around the world before the truth comes out, potentially?
Well, it wouldn't even be a lie, would it? But again, I'm confused about that. I mean, it may be that it will clarify and it will make a lot more sense in retrospect shortly, or it may be that it remains a little bit murky with these various competing theories as to why it happened. It will work well on social media. It's embarrassing for David Lammy not to be able to answer a question that he hasn't got the specific answer to yet, but he could have 10 minutes later, or some other theory that may move into the space available.
Question I think he should have had the answer to, and I think it does make him look a little bit on the back foot.
Yeah.
And if that wasn't the intention, coming to Prime Minister's questions, you do need to be prepared for absolutely everything to be thrown at you. And it, like I say, this was on his patch. He should have had an answer ready to go, and he didn't.
And by the time James Cartledge chose to ask the same question for the sixth occasion.
Yeah, someone could have passed him a note.
You thought there would have been a note saying you're fine on this.
Exactly.
Or you're not.
Or you're not. Know,
just put your hands up.
Yeah,
maybe they did, and he didn't.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Pass something to him saying, you know, this
Donald Rumsfeld Tribute Act. Known unknowns, unknown knowns.
But he would have had a section in his, you know, briefcase in his notes on specifically this, on the justice brief. And, you know, he's well versed at standing up in the House of Commons week in, week out, talking about how the Tories left us a really rough justice legacy. And I'm just surprised that he didn't go in on that earlier.
Thank you very much, Natasha Clark. After the news headlines, we will be joined by Ross Barkan, who ran for office in New York City, and his campaign was run by a chap you may have heard of called Zoran Mamdani. So if anybody knows what he is made of, politically and perhaps personally as well, it will be our next guest after Tim Humphrey brings you the headlines.
A migrant who re-entered the UK by small boat after being removed to France under the government's one-in-one-out deal has been deported again. The Home Office confirmed the Iranian man's departure after he arrived in the UK for a second time on October the 18th. At Prime Minister's Questions, David Lammy, who was standing in for Keir Starmer, apologised for the wrongful release of migrant Hadish Kabatu from a prison in Chelmsford. An independent review into workplace sickness is warning the UK is sliding into an avoidable crisis. 800,000 more people are out of work now due to ill health than in 2019. M&S has revealed the total cost of the cyber attack which hit the retailer at Easter. It's put the price at £136 million, almost wiping out its half-year profits. LBC weather, rain in northern and western areas moving north, followed by bright spells, dry and bright elsewhere, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
Did you know HGVs have four zones of limited vision around them? If you're in one of these areas, you may not be seen by the driver. These four limited vision zones are in front, behind, and at both sides of the HGV. So when you're driving around a HGV, don't linger around them, because they may not notice you're there. Know the HGV zones. National Highways.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale is now on. And it doesn't get any better than this. With an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. With measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 12:34 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I guess it's a mark of how stable or unstable things are, isn't it? How often we cross the Atlantic to have a look at US politics, and we have had a look at US politics rather often in recent months and to a lesser extent years. But I don't know quite what the word is. It's certainly not chaos, but the unexpected continues to unfold, most recently with the election to the mayoralty of New York City of Zoran Mamdani, who is at the moment in danger of appearing to be all things to all people, both negative and, of course, positive, given the size of the turnout and the size of his victory. One thing you can say about him with absolute certainty is that he is an orator. He has whatever it is, that magic ingredient that transforms some people on a podium into something very, very special, while many others remain avowedly ordinary.
If anyone can show a nation betrayed by Donald Trump how to defeat him, it is the city that gave rise to him. Donald Trump, since I know you're watching, I have four words for you. Turn the volume up.
Ross Barkin is a writer from New York City, a columnist on New York Magazine, and perhaps most pertinently, he ran for the New York State Senate a few years ago when a certain Zoran Mamdani ran his campaign, and Ross joins me now. 0% polling, I think, in October of last year. What the heck happened?
Well, I mean, it's rare to see a rise like this. You know, there are a few analogies in American politics. You know, but sometimes I think of Obama, who, you know, started down below Hillary and then shot up and, of course, won the presidency. But even Obama had been a star for several years and written a best-selling memoir, so he didn't quite come from total obscurity. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, he caught fire like no other candidate I can remember. And, you know, why Mamdani won, I think it's a few different factors rolled together. One, he has unique talent, as you said, a great orator, very charismatic. He had a campaign message that really resonated, focusing on affordability, focusing on income inequality. He seemed very authentic. He seemed very genuine. That excited people. He excited a lot of young people. It was a campaign, the rare local campaign to bring in people in their 20s, people in their 30s, you know, became this really multi-generational effort. And he really realigned and rewrote politics in New York City, which, of course, is the largest city in America. But if it were his own state, it'd be one of the 15 biggest states in America. So this was really a massive election. You know, more than 2 million people voted, the most since the 1960s. And it certainly is a new era in New York and perhaps in America, but certainly in New York. And now the hard part begins.
Indeed it does. Now the hard part begins. A quick thumbnail sketch, if you would, of how much power the mayor of New York actually has. I'm better qualified to answer that question with regard to the mayor of London. And the short version is not quite as much as you might imagine, given the attention devoted to the actual elections.
The New York mayor does have tangible power. They control the largest police department in America, the largest education department. They oversee a budget that's beyond $100 billion. there's a lot of money. There's a large bureaucracy. And there's much that you decide. Now, you also are beholden to the state of New York. So a New York mayor can't raise income taxes without permission from the state. The New York mayor doesn't control the subway system. It's run by a state authority. The city kicks in money if the state runs it. So the state certainly has a lot of power over the city. So the New York mayor is not supreme. But even in that context, a mayor between the bully pulpit and between the sheer amount of money and the bureaucracy, you know, 300,000 city employees that the mayor oversees. I mean, there's real power there. There's real power to make change.
Forgive me if this is a bit below your pay grade, but when the word socialist is applied to Mamdani, what precisely is that referencing?
Well, it comes out of DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America. And if you look at the history of DSA, they were actually founded in the 1980s as kind of a more reformist version of socialism, where they want to work inside the Democratic Party. And actually, during the Cold War, they were anti-Soviet, sort of an anti-Marxist. I think for Zoran Mamdani, it really means a greater social safety net expansion. You know, he can't literally erase capitalism. He can't seize the means of production. He can't do these things a communist with great power could actually do. I think for him, it means bringing universal childcare to New York City. It means bringing free buses. It means making the existence easier for working class tenants and freezing the rent in those rent stabilized apartments. It's really about those bread and butter issues to make working class life a bit more bearable. So in that way, it's not so radical, and maybe it's not so far reaching. And in some ways, it's trying to bring a European social welfare model into New York City as much as is possible.
But of course, the language is also used to inflame the less well-informed into believing that he is embarked upon doing precisely the things you mentioned, like taking over the means of production.
Right.
What you know of him personally, as opposed to politically or professionally, is any of this likely to go to his head, Ross?
No, actually, I don't think so. You know, he's someone who he has a real... There's a humbleness to him. I think there's also a sort of cautiousness. He's not someone who believes, you know, in far-fetched outcomes. I mean, I could even tell you, you know, winning this race was something, you know, he thought could happen, but it was not like he was counting his chickens before they hatched. So I think he's someone who's very aware of the enormity of the challenge. You know, he's not someone who's going to rest on his laurels, put it that way. I think he knows that now it gets harder. Running a campaign is incredibly hard, but running the city and also dealing with the opposition that he's going to face from Donald Trump, of course, but also from the entrenched interests. You know, he got 50%. Andrew Cuomo got just over 40, bringing in a lot of Republicans. So, you know, there are a lot of people who love Zoran Mamdani and are excited for him. And there are those who are wary of a young socialist running the city. So he has to prove that he's competent. He has to prove he's running a corruption-free administration. So I do think he's going to be very hyper-focused on that. I don't think he's someone who's going to be out partying late every night and not taking governing seriously. I do think he'll take it seriously.
What do we think? And I know the only thing you can say with any certainty about Donald Trump is that you can't say anything with any certainty about Donald Trump. But what do you think he's going to do?
I think more ICE agents into New York City. I think the National Guard roadshow will come into New York. I do think, when you think about Donald Trump and try and understand him, I think the spectacle of television is just so important to how he operates. And so for him, he's been sending National Guard troops to other cities. New York is kind of the season finale. I think that this is the big one. So I believe with Zoran as mayor, the Muslim socialist, I do think the National Guard at some point will be sent. And I also think he's going to try to illegally withhold federal funding. He's already doing this around public transportation on a big public transit project where the money had been allocated a while ago. This sort of stuff can get beaten back in the courts, but it's going to create a lot of headaches. So I think any way he can fiscally to tie up New York City, which does receive federal money, also sends a lot back in federal taxes. I do think Trump is going to do that. He's going to be hostile. There's no doubt about it.
This is a question I don't really want to ask, and it is a little bit of rain on Mamdani's parade. But it occurred to me this morning as I absorbed the news and the euphoria with which it's been greeted on your side of the Atlantic, and to a lesser extent in some parts over here. Does this increase the chances of, or rather, does it decrease the chances of next year's primaries being conducted in a free and fair fashion?
No, not necessarily. I believe when it comes to elections in America, something I always try to emphasize is local governments have a great deal of control. It's actually very, very hard in the United States to steal elections. There are ways to tamper. You had, of course, Trump after 2020 attempting his very convoluted scheme, but it didn't work. And also, one can tamper. You know, local Republican boards of elections can try to tamper with elections theoretically, but it's very hard for a federal official to come down into, you know, various counties in Georgia.
But a state of emergency. I mean, you mentioned the roadshow of the National Guard, the ICE agents, the completely mythical claims about warlike statuses in American cities, in Democrat American cities. The prospect, I scoffed at it the first time I heard the theory, Ross, but the idea of Donald Trump trying to claim some sort of state of emergency as a way to avoid elections entirely. I don't scoff at it now. Do you?
I don't scoff. I think with Donald Trump, you can't scoff at anything. I think you view things like through the lens of probability. Is that going to happen? Probably not. You can't scoff at anything. I'd say just as will Trump run for president in 2028, which is against the Constitution? I'd say probably not. Mm. But it's something you can't completely scoff at. Of late, he's backed away from it. So I expect there to be elections next year. I expect elections to continue. But look, with Donald Trump, I agree in that. I don't say no to anything. I just think the odds of it happening are remote. And there are a lot of other challenges that come with it. But, you know, you have to stay open to all possibilities. So I do agree with that.
Ross Barkin, many thanks indeed. Also the author of a rather splendid piece in the New Statesman that was published back in September before the result of the election, but certainly merits revisiting now. Ross, as I told you, is a writer from New York City and a columnist for New York Magazine. Also a former runner in a race for the New York Assembly, whose campaign was run by the New York State Senate, whose campaign was run by Zoran Mamdani. Some breaking news for you, perhaps, inevitably involving that PMQ's exchange and our own theory on what perhaps James Cartledge had up his sleeve.
Points for order, is it to correct the number of questions that I was right and you were wrong? I hope you're not going for a job at the Treasury. Come on, then, James Cartledge.
It's on a serious issue, I think, Mr. Speaker, just to be clear. The Telegraph are reporting that a police manhunt has been launched for a second asylum seeker mistakenly freed from prison. The question is, Mr. Speaker, how can you advise me on how I can ask the Justice Secretary whether he was aware of this when I asked him about it repeatedly in Prime Minister's question?
You want to? No. You put it on the record, right? Let us move on. Front bench change over.
I thought so.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Another jailed asylum seeker has escaped from prison and is still at large. I'll have the latest. Plus, Mamdani versus Trump. Is it the greatest show on earth?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high. And low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaite.co.uk. Laithwaite. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
At Morrison's, we've got all the chockies. Get Cadbury selection boxes for £2.25 and advent calendars for £1.25. That's half price with your more card. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores, offers and prices may vary online and Morrison's daily more card app required 18 plus. Box without more card, £4.50, ends 16th of November. Calendar, £2.50 without more card, ends 9th of November.
There's some naughty folks out there in cyberspace and it can be tough to tell a legit deal from a dodgy one. That's why you need Bitdefender, your very own digital heavyweight, working silently behind the scenes to keep you and your devices safe. Whatever threats the web throws at you. Trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time, and just as we expected, another foreign prisoner was lurking up James Cartledge's sleeve throughout that curious PMQs when he asked David Lammy six times whether or not he could guarantee that no more asylum seekers had been mistakenly released, something that David Lammy couldn't do. Whether or not he knew that a 24-year-old Algerian man was released by accident from HMP Wandsworth on the 29th of October, I don't currently know. But I would, as I said to Natasha, I would have been very surprised if that entire PMQs was a complete flyer. And it wasn't Henry Reilly.
Yes, no, you're right, it wasn't. And this, just to give you a bit more detail, James, because as you referenced, James Cartledge was obviously making this point. We have heard from the Met Police who've confirmed this is the case. It was first broken by Sky News. And I think what's curious here is, so we know that this is an Algerian prisoner. It has been reported in some outlets that they are an asylum seeker. That hasn't actually been confirmed by the Met statement, nor what we've heard from Wandsworth Prison. But I think the curious thing here is that there seems to have been a week between when this individual was released from Wandsworth, which was on Tuesday of last week, and the
the Met actually finding out, which is slightly bizarre. So what we know is, in fact, that was Wednesday. So on Wednesday, the 29th of October, this individual was released from Wandsworth Prison. And then it was only after 1 o'clock yesterday that the Met police found out. So they know that it's a 24-year-old Algerian man. Officers are carrying out urgent inquiries to locate him, to remand him into custody. You referenced the sheer number that we've been speaking about recently, the instances by which these types of errors have arisen, 262 in the calendar year from March 24 to March 2025. And what we understand is that this individual who has escaped from prison, or I should say released from error from prison, was serving time for trespass with intent to steal, but has previously committed sexual offences. So it's unclear whether he is in was serving time for sexual offences, but certainly he has a record in the past regarding sexual offences. But of course, it irks certainly with the government message, which was that they've put these new tight checks in for people to be released from prison, notably the governor having to approve it the night before, Dame Lynn Owens, the former deputy commissioner of the Met, launching this review. And and I suppose we will get more information as to regards the asylum status, regards the crimes in the coming hours.
Yeah, I mean, the phone-in we did at the time of Kabatu's early and accidental release feels relevant once again, where it is extraordinary to those of us outside the system that this could happen. The notion of, you know, however many people there are in the porter gapping at the prison gates or whatever the setup is, and not one of them says, can we just double check this? Especially 5 days after Kabatu got out early. I mean, as you say, there's a lot of detail to come, not least how much time was left on a sentence that was imposed for intent, trespass with intent to steal. I mean, a guy, it's unlikely he had 30 years left on the clock, isn't it?
No, it very unlikely that it was a particularly lengthy sentence, or whether it was the same case as Hadish Kabatu, that there was a deportation. I do doubt it in this case, but of course we don't know all of the facts. But I think really the focus, James, is once again on the sheer amount of time. And it does seem peculiar that you could have someone released an error on the Wednesday.
Just double down, belt and braces, lads. Check. Let's not let anyone out for a month, you know? Well, that's not an option, given the overcrowding they inherited. I want to be absolutely clear that this is an error of early release. A categorically not an escape. Nobody has, well, I don't want to do a David Lammy. This story is not about an escape from prison. It is about an accidental early release, despite the Deputy Prime Minister 2 days ago announcing enhanced, 2 days previously announcing enhanced checks on prisoner releases. More on this, no doubt, with Sheila Fogarty coming up, although it is one of those situations about which you won't know any more until you do know more, and when you do know more, you'll find out more. But such is the curse of radio presenters sometimes that we're going to have to talk about it anyway. I want to talk about Reform UK, because I kind of forgot about them a bit until I read about the parish council that is banning Christmas as a consequence of all the flags that are on the lamppost. So I thought it'd be a timely moment for you to give us a quick sort of update on how all these councillors, all the other councillors, are getting on. I know that the five county councils that were essentially elected on a promise to cut council tax have all revealed that they're going to put it up by 5%, which is the maximum amount allowed. Mm. So, you know, plus ça change there. What about individual experiences, resignations, removals, natural wastage?
There's quite a lot. I mean, I've got reams of paper in front of me. Yes. So it's 38 councillors that have either been kicked out, suspended, defected, or resigned since that sort of huge win for Reform back in
May. That's about 1 in 20, is it?
Yes, quite at least. To about 5%.
To be fair, then, because the balance is important, that is a much slower rate of attrition than their MPs.
It is.
The MPs either get removed or resign at a much quicker rate than the councillors, but 1 in 20 is still suboptimal.
It is. Well, in Labour, if you compare it with Labour, they're 2%, and Reform are at about 5%, and Labour's the second largest in terms of a party of that scale. Reform won 700-odd seats at the recent elections. But, I mean, certainly it seems unprecedented. I spoke earlier on, James, with the local government expert, Professor Tony Travers, who told me that it was an unusual rate of people leaving.
The loss of 40 or more councillors by Reform in the short period since they were won in May is unusual. Nothing like that's happened to the Conservative or Labour parties, for example. So in such a short time, it's definitely not the way politics normally pans out. Whether losing councillors is going to cut through to the electorate, whether people will think it looks a bit chaotic. I think almost certainly only at the margin. There's quite enough going on in politics at the national and local level, which will affect voting more. So, you know, I think Reform will want to convey the impression of being a well-run party. This won't help losing councillors, but in the end, other issues are going to drive voting more.
I don't want to contradict the inimitable Tony Travers from my alma mater, and neither do I want to sound like a Tom Cruise tribute act. Tom Jones tribute act. But it's not unusual if you've been following Nigel Farage's various political outfits over the last few years, but it is unusual in the broader context of British politics. Henry, where have they all gone?
Well, one has gone to UKIP, Amelia Randall.
They're still a thing.
I think she's now their only councillor across the country because she said we need to embed Christianity back into the soul of the country, so she left Reform and went to UKIP.
There's someone who's never read what Jesus had to say about how we should treat foreigners.
There are new parties, I'm delighted to say about James.
Yay! So
we have the Cornish Independent Non-Aligned Group, which is made up of five Reform councillors.
Yeah, I'm so pleased to hear that, because I tell you who I really got no time for, the Cornish Independent Aligned Group. They drive me potty.
Yeah,
as for the People's Front of Judea, let's not even get started on them.
Well, they're very different, these guys. So there were five. They actually have lost a councillor already, the Cornish Independent Non-Aligned Group.
Where's he gone?
Christine Parsonage has resigned.
She's not gone to the Independent Aligned Group for Cornish.
No, she's off the council.
She's gone entirely.
Her husband's the leader of the Cornish Independent Non-Aligned Group. He used to actually be the leader of Reform on Cornwall Council. He's right. Gone. There is also speculation Kent is the big story, because tomorrow is their first council meeting since Zoom Gates, where of course all of the council, we'll say all councils
were all
Zoomed
swearing
out
at each other. And what was the name of that lovely woman also on Zoom all those years? Days.
Jackie Weaver.
Yes, exactly.
But there were five who have gone because they were suspected of leaking that Zoom footage. There's seven actually in total who've left Reform on Kent Council. That's the real pin-up, by the way, Reform on Kent.
I'm going to channel James Cartledge for a moment. Can you guarantee that there is only five who've gone? Because since you came on air, the Telegraph have reported... No, they haven't.
Well, it's seven in total, but five because of the leaked footage. But I can tell you, James, that ahead of the council tomorrow, there is quite a lot of speculation online, and I will be there tomorrow, that there may well be a new group, a new party called the Independent Reform of Kent Group.
Marvellous.
Which will be Reform Council. Councillors, how many yet of the seven?
So run me through that again. Independent
Reform of Kent Group, where they're ex-Reform councillors who've been suspended, resigned, kicked out, one of the three, and will form this new grouping because they're very dissatisfied with the leader, Lyndon Kemp-Caron.
Once again,
Independent Reform of Kent Group, and not to be confused with the Cornish Independent Non-Aligned Group.
Or the Independent Reform for Kent Group, which is yet to be formed. I'm being very careful. I always have Nikki Campbell in the back of my mind at these moments.
So do I.
Or indeed the Independent for Cornwall Aligned Group, about whom we know next to nothing, which frankly is an indication of your pitiful journalism.
We don't know yet, and I'm sorry not to have got the scoop, but I can tell you, James, that another time we'll have to go through some of these individual members, because there's some curious examples, one of which, someone who actually signed Nigel Farage's, he was a signatory for Farage to stand for election in Clacton.
But that means Nigel's never met him.
Well, I mean, he's a Clacton councillor. He's left Reform in the last few weeks.
What?
Unclear why, so we'll be finding out.
Okay, and just I don't know, apropos nothing in particular, you don't have to have taken bribes from a Kremlin stooge to parrot Kremlin talking points in the European Parliament. Some people are perfectly happy to do it for free. Thank you very much, Henry Reilly. That is it from me for today. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on Global Player and the new LBC app. Stay up to date on all the top stories. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio. Listen to a range of podcasts. Including Full Disclosure with Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia this week. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store. Now, Tom Swarbrick with you at 4, but now on LBC, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. Don't go anywhere, Henry, don't go anywhere. Henry's keeping a close eye on that story that's just broken about another asylum seeker who'd been jailed, mistakenly released from prison in London, at Wandsworth Prison to be precise. It comes after a bit of back and forth at Prime Minister's questions about it, which led nowhere really. So we'll get the very latest on that, both what's happened and the political implications of it. At 2, I'll be joined by an old friend of mine, Andrew Marr, to talk about why Britain is such a sick nation and what Rachel Reeves needs to do about it, and the
the government more broadly. And depending on your lens, Zoran Mamdani, newly elected mayor of New York, is a dangerous Islamist or the man who'll save the Dems. Which is it? Who is he? And does it matter to us?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, another foreign prisoner has been mistakenly released from prison. The error, which happened last Wednesday, saw a 24-year-old Algerian man released from HMP Wandsworth. It's understood the man was serving time for trespass, but had previously committed sexual offences. LBC's Henry Riley has more.
So we know that this is an Algerian prisoner. It has been reported in some outlets that they are an asylum seeker. That hasn't actually been confirmed by the Met statement, nor what we've heard from Wandsworth prison. But I think the curious thing here is that there seems to have been a week between when this individual was released from Wandsworth, which was on Tuesday of last week, and the Met actually finding out, which is slightly bizarre.
A migrant who returned to the UK by small boat after being removed under the government's one-in-one-out policy has been deported again. The Iranian national came back across the channel on the 18th of October after leaving a month before. Several people have been seriously hurt after a car drove into pedestrians on an island off the coast of France near La Rochelle. A local man has been arrested. Officials say the 35-year-old suspect resisted arrest and was subdued using a stun gun. LBC's correspondent in Paris, Peter Allen, has more.
At 8:45 this morning, a car was driven into around 10 pedestrians on Oloron, and multiple casualties have been reported. The latest report I've had is that 3 people are in intensive care. 7 others are also in a pretty bad way.
School unions are welcoming plans to reform the curriculum in England, meaning primary-age children will learn about money and artificial intelligence. The government also wants to cut GCSE exam time by 3 hours for the average student. New York City's next mayor has told supporters they've toppled a political dynasty after being elected as the youngest and most liberal person to hold the office in decades. Zoran Mamdani has called himself Donald Trump's worst nightmare, although the US president says things would have gone better if he were on the ballot. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 6 points at 97.21. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.14. And the LBC weather, rain in northern and western areas, moving north, followed by bright spells, dry and bright elsewhere with a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. A 24-year-old man from Algeria who was in prison in Wandsworth, an asylum seeker, has been mistakenly released from prison in London. This is just a short time after a man called Hadush Kabatu was wrongly freed, you remember. He was in the Bell Hotel in Epping and was in prison in Essex and was mistakenly released. He's now been deported back to Ethiopia. This whole question was raised in the House of Commons as to whether there were other asylum seekers who'd either escaped or been wrongly released from prison. And the Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, in for Keir Starmer, didn't really answer the question, pointing to a review by Dame Lynn Owens being underway as to what happened and whether it had happened before or since. Well, it has. Henry Riley is here to tell us the detail, and we'll hear from Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, in just a second about the political implications of all of this, for there are many. Henry, what do we know so far?
What we know, and it's all still emerging at this time, but I think the crucial thing is the gap, the sheer length of time that took place between this individual, the 24-year-old Algerian man, we don't know his name yet, being released from Wandsworth prison and when the Metropolitan Police found out. So this individual was released from Wandsworth on Wednesday, the 29th of October. And it was only yesterday at around 1 o'clock, shortly after one, that the Met Police was informed that this individual had been released in error. Now, of course, HMP Wandsworth, we've spoken about the number of people who've been released in error, 262 instances between March 24 and March 2025. This individual released in error. There's now a manhunt underway. But that was the prison, of course, that Daniel Khalif, you'll recall, last year was actually absconded. So slightly different, but nonetheless, there were question marks at the time about the practices there.
And there's
at Wandsworth
been a documentary, hasn't there, as well, made into exactly what's going on at Wandsworth Prison in terms of standards. Can I just correct something I said? It isn't established with certainty yet that this is an asylum seeker, this 24-year-old.
That's right. It has been reported in some places, but from what we've heard from the Metropolitan Police and the Ministry of Justice, that hasn't been confirmed yet. All we know is that this individual is a foreign national. But really where we are now is a Metropolitan Police who seemingly were told only yesterday, nearly a week after this individual was released in error. Officers are carrying out urgent inquiries to locate him, to return him to custody. And, of course, all of this has been raised because of the mistaken release of Hadish Kabatu, the sex offender who was released in error from Chelmsford Prison. In that case, it was across 3 days, but it took the Met Police around 48 hours to actually locate this individual. He was in Finsbury Park with an avocado bag and still in his prison uniform. He was also spotted around Dalston Library, you'll recall, in CCTV on Friday night. So, but I think really this irks, and I'm sure Natasha will speak more about this, but with the government announcing all of these checks with regards to prison governors, a duty prison governor having to sign this off the day of, and also the governor sign it off the night before in terms of releasing someone to make sure this doesn't happen, and this review being done by the former deputy commissioner, Dame Lynn Owens, which in terms of the timescale, it was reported it would be a few months. You wonder if this will ramp up pressure for that to be, for that to come a lot quicker.
There are lots of questions here, aren't there? We'll come to Natasha in just a second on some of them as they affect politics. But how it happened, first of all, is about the prison standards. How the delay in telling the police happened, 5 days, 6 days, almost a week. When you think when it came to Kabatu, it was fairly short order that he was found in a city of millions, 2 days, as you say. But this is worse in a way, isn't it?
It does seem extraordinary. It's interesting you say about the timeline, because it was on the Friday, wasn't it, that we learned that Hadish Kabatu had been released in error. And that was, it was broken by the Sun newspaper. But very soon afterwards, we'd heard from the government, we'd heard from the Metropolitan Police. And so everyone was aware.
Sighting pictures were out there all over social media.
The thing I neglected to mention, by the way, is that the individual here, the Algerian man, was serving time for trespass with intent to steal, but has previously been convicted, it's understood, of sexual offences. So unclear as to whether he was in for that, but it seems it was for trespass with intent to steal. But nonetheless, it begs the question about another sex offender who's been on seemingly at large.
Thank you very much indeed, Henry. Henry Riley, LBC's reporter there with the latest. Our reporter, Helen Hoddenott, has headed down to Wandsworth. We'll hear from her in all likelihood this hour as well. Natasha Clark.